Walk by the Foo Fighters is our number one song for the third straight week. That's it for us.
Thanks to Rival Sons for stopping by today. Now, you can check them out at rivalsons.com.
And if you missed any part of the countdown, get caught up at thesideshowcountdown.com. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done. Saturday, September 24th, WRIF Second Annual Rocktoberfest. And admission is totally free. It's a perfect plan. Sample a large selection of craft and specialty beers, plus delicious food, live bands all day in the beer garden, football on the big screen, fun in the Rip Man Card Village, including the beer pong tournament for a trip to Las Vegas and the beer pong championship. A portion of the proceeds benefit the Penricton School for the Blind in Taylor.
Fun. Ridiculous. How can you not love that?
Rocktoberfest.
This is our duty as men.
Presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Details at WRIM.com.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. And, hey, we're back, as it says on our Facebook page. Hi, Julene.
Hi, Peter. Good to be back.
Two Sundays in a row, no night call because of Labor Day. Then because of 9/11.
Yes.
Didn't want to be arguing with people about politics on 9/11.
We gave it a rest for once.
Hey, you know, this show is about 41 years old. It was begun by a guy named Harvey Ofshinsky, who also began the Fifth Estate Underground newspaper way back in the 60s. And I've probably hosted it the longest, but a number of other hosts as well. And in that entire 41 years, this is the biggest gap of programming ever.
I know. I was thinking about that earlier today. I thought that's very rare for us to be off 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
It's very strange. But, to be back. Rare and to go.
And as we say, we have one of the few jobs where we're not actually happy to take the day off.
Yeah, exactly. Because in the last 3 weeks since we've been on the air, boy, have there been some things happening.
Yeah.
Wackadoodles are getting more wackier by the day. And, jeez.
Well, you know, this whole election stuff, I was thinking we get to vote for either the party that can't fix it or the party that caused it.
Right, exactly.
So, that being, of course, the party that can't seem to fix it are the Democrats. The party that caused it are the Republicans and their Reaganomics and their anti-regulatory stuff and all that. And they just want to do more. They want to do it. They want another shot at it. You know, so you don't want to. I could imagine thinking, well, I don't want to stick with a party that can't fix it. But do I really want to go to the party that caused it?
Right, exactly. The real party of no.
Yeah. You know, and it's very possible that there's a long time between now and November 2012. Things as they are, it's very possible that if the Republicans don't put up one of the wackadoodle candidates and get somebody like, what's his name? Milt? Not Milt.
Mitt.
Mitt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did I get the L in there? Mitt Romney. It could very well be that the Republicans could take it.
Yeah, I know.
Because here's the difference, that Democratic voters are highly principled, and I know Republican voters think they are as well. They have that self-image. But when the Democratic candidates or the politicians don't deliver, it so discourages Democrats. They say, well, we're not just going to go vote for anybody. We have principles, and if Barack Obama or whoever else in the Democratic Party doesn't deliver in terms of the progressive goals that most Americans and most Democrats want, well, then they have a tendency to stay home.
Yeah, which is disappointing to me, I think. I mean, and I hope Perry or Bachman goes as long as they can, because they are nutty and there's no way they can win.
Yeah.
I think, but.
Well, it's interesting what's going to be happening. But one of the things that would be most interesting if this campaign had not started like 15 months before the election.
Right.
How about 15 days?
Yeah, it's going to be a long, long year.
Yeah, and it has to do with the nature of, sure, the electoral cycle, but it's also the media cycle. And the reason that the media is so into all this is because, hey, it gets people all
ratings
interested.
Yeah.
It gets them riled. And I never, it never would occur to me to watch any of this stuff. Remember, I always say, don't even watch any of these politicians. That, you know, don't watch Bush on television. Don't watch Obama on television.
Right.
Because the nature of the medium, the television itself, really does not encourage critical thinking.
Right. Well, and it also plays on people's emotions more than if you just read a speech. I have not watched a presidential speech in, I don't know how many years, Peter, but I always know what's going on. I always know what they said.
You can read it the next day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to have the power because, for one thing, it's television, the official medium of the culture. It is through which, you know, anybody can put out a newspaper. I do.
Yes, you
so
do.
So anybody can. But, the television, although, yeah, you can have small cable channels and all that, mostly it, you know, that you have to be well connected, well positioned within the financial system and culture of a particular country. So, and it also, that's where the voice of the rulers always come off. That's where they come out of. That's where the official news comes out of. If there's a storm or a war, you know, that's where it all comes. So then when the president, whether it's Bush or Obama or anybody, they show up and they've got they look majestic.
They have their flag pin on.
They have their flag pin on and they've usually got 40 flags in back of them.
Yeah.
And the speech has been well crafted in order
Absolutely.
To elicit a response.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it's all about. So I think increasingly people are just turning off.
Oh, I definitely think so. But I think the media has done the most damage of all by spreading misinformation.
Yeah.
And then putting all these crazies on, the teabaggers.
Well, one thing about conservatives and right-wingers, they don't get discouraged. I mean, no matter what kind of foibles are exposed in terms of their candidates or their political parties or what scandals or anything like that, it doesn't...
They're unruffled.
It gives them no pause whatsoever.
Zero.
And I'll tell you, that kind of dog-on-a-bone political mentality works.
Well, clearly.
Yeah, and it works. You know, I was thinking that people... Well, I don't know. Why can't I say something provocative? This is a talk show, and you can call me, Peter Werby, and Jalene Jordan at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
All the fascist movements of Spain that didn't come to power by military means, like in Spain, but Germany, Italy, Romania, Hungary, Poland, they were minorities that brought them to power. And in Germany, I mean, geez, there were elections in which the left parties got over 50% of the votes, but they were split, and the Nazis had like a third. They never got more than a third of the population to vote for them.
Yeah.
And am I comparing Nazi party voters in the early 30s to conservatives today? Would I be that provocative? You know what? The Nazi voters, the people that voted, the Germans that voted for the Nazi party, in Germany in the early 1930s, they didn't say, okay, that's good. Let's kill all the Jews and have World War II where 30 million people.
We love that program.
Yeah, they did. That wasn't the program. I mean, that's not what they said.
They didn't know.
Yeah, they didn't know. In fact, nobody knew. I don't think, forget about the history. In other words, they thought that they wanted the strong leadership. They were really into the mysticism of the political state and the nation. You know, this whole thing of blood and soil, German blood, German soil, the homeland, as they called it, Deutschland über alles, Germany over all. And but it shows places like Germany and other countries in the 1930s showed the capacity of small political parties that can't command a majority to actually make history, to seize political power within a state.
It's amazing.
And what's that old Frank Zappa little thing? I won't try to sing it. It can't happen here.
Right. Know. Of course not.
Yeah, because we have democratic guarantees.
Yeah.
Didn't they there also? Yeah, I want to get somebody on the air because they've got to take off, and it's an announcement, and an important one. It's Mike calling in from Toledo. Mike, thanks for calling in. What's your announcement?
Hey, Peter, how you doing? Do you remember me?
Well, I don't know. I know a lot of Mikes.
Yeah, you do. We put out together. I don't know if you saw the email I sent you today.
No.
But we put out the I sent you quite an extensive one. But we put together a special edition of your newspaper, Fifth Estate.
Oh, yeah.
On the Zebra Mussel Alliance that we organized to blockade the Fermi 2 nuclear power plant about, 12 years ago, maybe it was?
Okay.
One afternoon went out and with several hundred people, I think we had maybe even 1,000 people out there that day, blockaded the Fermi 2 nuclear power plant, surrounded it, and stopped people from getting in for a day. You remember that, right?
I remember it well.
several of us, I wasn't arrested, but several people were. And so...
Anyway. Let me say, if people think that that's odd activity, I mean, there is a level of desperation when the political powers that be are creating a context of employing a technology so dangerous and allowing, this so circumvents the democratic process. So people, as they've done throughout American history, employed nonviolent civil disobedience at Fermi 2 those many years ago. Go ahead, Mike.
Those many years ago, and then the issue seems to disappear from the radar for a while.
Right.
But something's coming up, right?
Yeah.
But now we've got this post-Fukushima scenario. I don't know if you've had Harvey Wasserman on the show since Fukushima happened.
I have.
I've been living in Italy. I was in Italy this spring where there was a massive mobilization of the Italian populace, even though we're stuck with a right-wing relative, you could say, dictator, Silvio Berlusconi, as still as president. The Italian people mobilized and voted on a referendum to ban nuclear power permanently in Italy.
Yeah, he was so busy having his bunga bunga parties.
Yeah, the bunga bunga parties with the 17-year-old Moroccan prostitute.
This is the is he the president or the prime minister? He's the prime minister, isn't he?
He's the prime minister.
The prime minister. This is a guy, Berlusconi, who owns like half of Italy. And he would have these, what he called, bunga bunga parties. And he would have women dressed as nuns and do lap dances.
Really?
Really.
Dressed as nuns? That's kind of twisted.
It's a Catholic country.
That is so weird.
Yeah. And so he's being prosecuted for having some...
it was the 17-year-old?
17-year-old. Yeah, and he's like 78 or something like that.
Oh, my.
And but he still remains as prime minister. But go ahead, Mike. Listen, let's get your announcement in here.
All right. We have mobilized on October 1st throughout the United States a synchronized day of action targeting the nuclear industry. And you can go and check out what's happening at the website, which is coalitionagainstnukes.org, which just came up online this week. In this area, the industrial corridor between Detroit and Toledo, there are going to be two rallies on October 1st, and a caravan departing from Detroit at 10 a.m. And if you go to the website, you can find out exactly where it's departing from. It's departing from a library, Henry Ford Library, I believe it's called.
In Dearborn,
yeah. And it's departing at 10 a.m. to get to Monroe, Michigan, where we'll be meeting at the statue of Custer.
General George Custer, the symbol of Monroe. He was born in Monroe.
A symbolic meeting point over the years that reminds us of the gentler, ecologically minded peoples that inhabited this area and the damage we have done in just over 200 years. We're there at Custer's statue for an hour and 10 minutes. And then from there, we're going to caravan down to Toledo, which sits halfway between Fermi 2 nuclear power plant and the Davis-Besse nuclear power plant. And in downtown Toledo in Promenade Park, which is right on the Maumee River, we're going to have speakers. We're going to have music. A friend of yours named Sherry Lutz who's in the band called The Insurgency from Detroit that played at the Detroit Social Forum, in Toledo, as well as several other groups. And a long list of speakers, including Mike Keegan, who's from Don't Waste Michigan and a longtime fighter.
It sounds like an enormous amount of things going on. I might take part in it. I'm always urging people to involve themselves in this. Well, look,
it's October 1st, Peter, you will put something on your website.
I'll put something
on our Facebook page.
And we'll put it on the Facebook page for Night Call, which is facebook.com/Night Call. And, Mike, one thing before you go, what's the website?
It's coalitionagainstnukes.org. If I could just say one thing about Obama, because you guys were talking about the presidential politics going on. In 2005, Obama came out in Illinois. He was a senator.
You know what, Mike, you've had a lot of time. We're going to have to let that part of
it
go.
Email
us. Maybe we'll read it. All right. Thanks, Mike, for all that information.
We've got people lining up on the phones.
We'll put it up on the Facebook page, and we'll have it also on my website, which is Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And there's lots of things going on. Right now, there's an occupation of Wall Street going on. And so many people are taking matters into their own hands nonviolently, and like they did across the Arab world, where, I mean, the governments have often responded not so nonviolently, but the best ones, Tunisia and Egypt, have to a large extent. I mean, there's some,
The people were pretty darn successful.
Pretty darn successful. Yeah. But right now there's put together by Adbusters. Look at, and I think it's adbusters.com or adbusters.com. But on my website, peterwerbe.com, there's a whole thing about Occupy Wall Street. It's happening right now. You can see actually online videos of it. And then on October 6th, Thursday, there's going to begin an occupation of Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., and the people intend to make it there. Tahrir Square. Remember, that was what was people were camped out in Cairo. And they're going to nonviolently resist the corporate machine, they say, until our resources are invested in human needs and environmental protection instead of war and exploitation. Also on my, actually, there's a number of really good things there. You know, all I'm doing is copying and pasting, so I'm not, I'm not bragging. but it's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Robert Reich, who was he the Secretary of Treasury during Clinton? But he debunked six big Republican lies about the economy. And right below that, Noam Chomsky talking about 9/11. Noam Chomsky, one of the premier social critics in the United States. And, they asked Dick Cheney, the guy that partly responsible for all the misery that we're facing now, they asked him, how does it feel to be compared to Darth Vader? And he said, I'm honored to be compared to
he is Darth creepier Vader. Than ever. I mean, okay, and he lost a lot of weight. And he's creepier than ever.
Yeah.
If that was even possible.
313-298-WRIF is our phone number. For those of you without letters on your telephone or your handheld.
Yeah, 313-298-9743. And you can also email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I have an email from George from Taylor.
Yeah.
And he said the Republicans' Congress are acting as if there is no electorate, and the evidence seems to be compelling. The exit polling that used to happen happens no more. With the corporate control of the election process with electronic voting machines in just a few swing states leads to more questions about our democracy.
Yeah, indeed. And tell me, people, and tell us, tell everybody listening, which includes me and Jolene and everyone else out there, are you optimistic or pessimistic? I actually ran into a friend of mine, a political activist, and he said he has never been so optimistic and enthusiastic about chances for political change. I said, yeah. I'm really depressed.
I know.
And he said, we got to get together. And I said, yeah.
Maybe you can balance each other out.
There. Well, you know, what's the old phrase? It's always darkest before the storm. No, wait a minute. Is always darkest before the dawn.
The storm, the dawn.
Yeah, what's the difference? Whatever. There is some difference. The good news is, and this is not a sports talk show, so this will go no further than this, but the Tigers have won the Central Division.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, I came back from vacation, and they're 12 and a half games.
Yeah, they want to get earlier, and also...
the Lions.
Yeah, I just have to say, they blew out the Kansas City Chiefs today. I don't even care about sports, but this makes me happy. Anything that's good for Detroit makes me so happy.
I think it was 41-3.
Something like that.
I mean, that's kind of
outrageous.
All right, that's it for sports. That's the good news.
Let's go, Pat. Let's
and also, the good news may be that people are beginning to just reach the point like they did in Network. You know, they're mad as hell and aren't going to take it anymore. I mean, people are mad as hell. And so, but it's both ways. People are discouraged because, as I said at the beginning of the show, we have the party that can't fix it that's in office now and the party that broke it, and they're just thirsting to get back in. I don't know why. I mean, if you really screwed something up, if you'd be had this 30-year run of having your economic policies actually become successful, and it screwed everything up, we say, I want to do it again. Let me back in.
You know?
And we're going to take the same policies, lowering taxes for the rich and corporations, deregulating more, even more, and saw that what had been created is the ruination of this great nation. Wouldn't you say, I mean, wouldn't you maybe go, like, to a monastery?
The thing is, they don't see that.
Have some vows of silence. Well, I wonder who they think screwed it up. I mean, now they could say Obama's been in office for, what, about 3 years or so, 2.5. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to blame it on him. Because I look at right-wing websites and they talk about, they have banner headlines, you know, unemployment up, long-term unemployment may be here for a decade. Nobody over 55 is ever going to get a job again.
Yeah.
Poverty is increasing. And that was happening during the so-called good times under George W. Bush because of the Reaganomic Bush economic policies. And so now that they're shifting the blame, or at least saying, look, the Democrats, when they... For 2 years, had both houses of Congress and a Democratic president, and they still control the Senate, and they have the presidency, and they can't fix the economy. They can't fix anything.
Well, it was bigger than this. It was just too big.
Well, it was, like I say, the Republicans broke it badly. I mean, the Democrats had a hand in it, too, under Clinton, things like signing NAFTA and all
Biggie.
That.
Biggie, yeah.
So, and now, I love this. Republicans are calling Obama's new tax plan proposals class warfare.
I know. I saw that and I thought, really? You people are pathetic.
That it would be. Because class warfare, as we always say in the show, has been practiced. Well,
going on to the middle class.
Yeah.
In a big way.
Except we're losing.
Right.
The middle class, the working class, in fact, for a while, until the working class actually became organized heavily in the 1930s, there really wasn't much of a middle class. There was some, I mean, to be sure. Mm-hmm. But mostly it was the real rich, and then there was the workers, and then there was poor. And that's the way it really was ever since class society began. Like, depending on when you date it, say even as long ago as 4,000 years. So you have it's interesting that the Republicans bring up the idea of class warfare when they are the ones that practice it and successfully. So what they've done is it's been a wealth transfer, great wealth transfer of to the ultra wealthy and the corporations from the wage earners, the middle class and the working class. And so now that that President Obama has proposed a new minimum tax rate for millionaires, and that's what they're calling.
It's about time he said this.
Class warfare. And they're calling it the Buffett rule. And that refers to Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor, one of the richest men in the world, who has complained repeatedly over the years that the richest Americans generally pay a smaller share of their income in federal taxes than middle-income workers.
Yeah, I love that they named it that. It's a hoot.
Yeah. And the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, said Sunday that there was, quote, bipartisan opposition to what the president is recommending because it would slow growth in difficult times. Now, we got a phone line into this studio. It's 313-298-WRIF. And can anyone tell me how taxing 400,000 people, that's all there is, that make over $1 million or more over...
It's per year, yeah.
450,000, here it is, 450,000 taxpayers that make over $1 million. And they're the ones that would be taxed up to 29% from somewhere making 17-18%. So they get taxed like 10% more. And I wonder if there's anybody out there that could take advantage of these phones and show how it would slow growth. I don't get it.
Please explain. We're confused.
Now, there's 144 million tax returns filed for 2010. And of those, 450,000 would have to pay about 10% more taxes.
And it would make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of the criticisms is it's not like it would,
solve the world's problems.
Or solve even the debt problem. So right. What they got to do, in my estimation, is tax them much, 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 much more heavily.
Than 29%?
Yeah. I mean, say wealth over, income over $2 million a year ought to be taxed at 90%.
Oh, now, man, there you go.
And wealth tax, people that are sitting around with $40, $50 billion, Buffett and Gates and the Koch brothers and Michael Bloomberg of New York City, the mayor, and all that. Just, I mean, we got a problem here.
Buffett and Gates would be a little more down with the program.
Yeah, I mean, leave them a billion.
Yeah, you can have a billion.
We're not any damn commies. Yeah. we want billionaires, yeah? And how in the world can anybody argue that somehow that this would mean, well, they wouldn't create jobs? They're not creating jobs now.
Right.
Right? And they've got the Bush tax cut. Obama even allowed the Bush tax cut. So I don't get it. Maybe one of you do. Maybe one of you can read this, I like your word, wackadoodle. Reaganomics. This is what has sent so many people to the poorhouse.
And what these folks don't get is that Obama's bent over backwards for those Republicans.
Right. Let's see. There's another. This is, well, it's not peculiar. You can understand it. The Palestinians are planning to go either to the Security Council or to the General Assembly of the United Nations, maybe both, maybe just the General Assembly, to ask for nation status. In other words, instead of being an occupied territory, as they have been since 1967, they're going to say they want to what they want to be is admitted as a state, but the United States is going, on the Security Council, will veto that, which will end it. So, I mean, all right, so we have that. But then they will go to the General Assembly that it has, I think, 189 nations, where they'll win. Because the only people that will vote against the Palestinians getting what they call state observer status.
Let's see, Israel?
Israel, the United States. And what is...
Wait, England.
No.
No?
No. I don't know. It's interesting. Vanuatu, what is that little... One of these little... There's some weird little...
Island?
Yeah, remind me, folks. What is it? Calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Like Vanuatu?
Vanuatu.
Something like that.
Vanuatu.
I only know because Survivor was on there.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I don't know what's up with those folks.
Something like that.
So, and that would mean then, here's the deal. I mean, I think there's about 500,000 Israeli settlers in what would then become...
Occupied territory.
In occupied territory. And it is absolutely against international law to annex territory gained by military conquest. So as it is, well, what they call is facts on the ground. So they go, hey, we got 500,000 people here, we got big cities, yeah, we got our highways through the West Bank, and that's it. And this is going to be the historic land of Israel. So what is curious, you would think on the face of it, most people, in fact, I'm willing to bet that 90% of the audience may not even, are aware of this, but in a lot of ways couldn't care. I mean, you talk to people, if you don't have what they call a dog in the fight. If you're not Jewish or if you're not Arabic, it's just most people say, oh, it's like, you know, it's like Ireland.
It's that pesky little Middle East conflict.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Arabs seem real crazy, but then also they seem to be screwed by the Israelis. The Israelis seem a lot more like us, which they really are.
Yeah.
It's like a mini me America in the best. But also in the worst senses of it. But so the United States has always played a role, and the appears like this constructive role because we're always trying to get negotiations going. But really, it's all about, why is there this fixation by this government on the internal affairs of another to the extent that it is?
Yeah.
Well, it's clear. It's all about the Jewish votes, which are very prominent in
the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. Particularly in places like Florida.
Oh, yeah.
New York, mm-hmm. places like that. And Jews are very heavily involved in the political process, generally liberal. 80%
right.
of Jewish voters went for Obama in 08, and they're part of the Republican strategy is they're trying to characterize Obama as being anti-Israel.
Right. Yeah. Yet he's not.
No.
He really is not.
Yeah. So now both parties are bending over backwards to show how much they support Israel and they don't want a Palestinian state set up unilaterally like this. You know, Israel was set up like that. There was all of a sudden, you know, 1948, they go like, okay, there's now a state there that is a Jewish state, which in itself, I mean, here were the people that done such enormous damage. Mm. I mean, unprecedented damage during World War II. Beyond, you know, we all hear about yeah. the Holocaust, but I think it's almost inconceivable when we start hitting numbers like that and what it did to the social fabric of countries like Ukraine and Poland and places like that where there was just literal extermination. Mm. So there was great sympathy for the survivors and a country was just sort of set up. I mean, it's not the part of it. There's supposed to be a Palestine, too, but there was this little war, and it wound up to just be Israel. In New York City, there's a big flare-up because there are these subway station billboards, and and there's a number of Jewish politicians that are saying this is anti-Israel. And there's a suspicion on the part of many Jews that if you're critical of Israel, it masks an anti-Semitism.
Really?
Yeah. Rather than, I've heard
it. Rather than it being about the what the army's doing and what the government is doing.
Yeah, right. I mean, here's a people that have been persecuted throughout their history. So, there's a saying, I mean, a horrible saying that said, even in the warmest heart, there's a cold spot for the Jews.
Wow.
Yeah. And whereas I think that now we're certainly at a point in the United States is that, anti-Semitism is really low. Most people couldn't care less whether anybody's Jewish.
Yeah, right.
I always say
people that.
I think the only people.
Stereotype.
Yeah. I think the only people that know who Jews are other Jews and Nazis.
Yeah, probably.
These right wingers. You go to these right wing sites, and they say, you know, so and so is a Jew, and I go, oh, really? I didn't know that. You know? I mean, nobody knows that. Of course, that's part of their probably insanity that it's this stealth deal.
We just need to listen to the Adam Sandler song, then we know who is all Jewish. The Hanukkah song.
Does he name?
Yes, David Lee Roth. You know, he goes on and on.
David Lee Roth is Jewish.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's right. That the Roth is a Jewish name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. The David Lee.
Right. Yeah, but maybe the I don't know.
Who else?
I can't even. That's the only one I remember.
Okay.
I've only heard the song a few times.
Call talkyes at yahoo.com. So anyway, this group called Two Peoples, One Future. That seems pretty decent.
Sounds okay.
Yeah, and it's from the area around New York City. And so what they did, here they show a Jewish couple and they show an Arab couple. And it says, be on our side. We are on the side of peace and justice. End military, U.S. military aid to Israel.
Okay.
I mean, and then you can go to their website, twopeoplesonefuture.org. And so let me see. This type is so small, I can't believe it. So here, these Jewish politicians from the city council, we urge you to disallow and or remove these advertisements. So what is that? I mean, why can't, I mean, this is criticizing the United States, for one thing. It's not even criticizing Israel.
Right.
And it is saying, here, this is this wonderful photograph of these two. Actually, it's a Jewish man and a Jewish child, and a Palestinian man and a Palestinian child. And in fact, I mean, I got a Xerox of this, so I think what it is, I think it's the Jewish guy. I don't know. I can't even tell. But anyway, this is about peace. This is about justice.
Yeah.
And they're saying, hey, can you stop military aid?
Which, you know, and that's amazing because when I was living in South Florida, there were all over the place pro-Israel groups that had advertisements. They had television ads, Peter.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, the anti-Israel, you know, it was pretty much anti-Arab countries. And I would look at these thinking, wow, okay. So, you know. To each his own.
All right. Give us some feedback on this. What do we do about this political scene? I mean, am I right in my characterization? Right now we have the party in power in the presidency that can't fix it. And the other side, the Republicans, are the party that caused it, that wants to get back in. So what are we to do?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Attention. Hydralyze is currently seeking participants with dark circles and puffy eyes. If you have dark circles or bags under your eyes, whether they are due to fatigue, your diet, or simply aging, you are eligible to participate in a Hydralyze trial. Hydralyze was introduced to address the visible signs of aging to the delicate skin around your eyes and has been shown to visibly erase dark circles and bags. To find out how you can try Hydralyze free for 30 days and participate in the Hydralyze trial, call 1-800-396-5826. Fragile capillaries under the eyes can leak, allowing blood to pool beneath the skin like a dark, ugly bruise. But now you can join the thousands of people who have seen these signs of under-eye aging literally fade away. Participate in this risk-free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of dark circles or bags under your eyes, you're eligible to participate today and experience results risk-free with Hydralyze. Call this number today. 1-800-396-5826. Once more, that's 1-800-396-5826.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. So is anybody out there that thinks taxing the rich heavily is a bad idea? Is there anybody that really thinks they're job creators? I mean, they got so much money now. What do they have, Jalene? Like $1 trillion in cash on hand?
Oh, yeah.
What? Do you want me to turn your mic off so you can finish eating your M&Ms?
No. Don't tell.
Just wash it down with your Coke.
I eat my way through this show.
Wow. All right. Here's Kurt. Kurt's in Waterford. Kurt, thanks for being our first caller. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? I just wanted to call in and say something about that rich person tax.
Yeah.
Upper class tax. I just feel like even though it would help out, like, in concept, but it's not going to go out to the people that need it. Like, the government each year is going further and further into debt and not spending the money on what the people need. It's spending on what it wants to.
Like the defense budget, for example.
Right.
Well, there has to be some priorities here. And what keeps getting cut back is things that we need. for our country. I mean, one of the things that that Obama, in fairness to him, that he's proposed would be all of this expenditures on infrastructure, rebuilding schools, you know, stuff like that. So that would be good.
Right, but I just feel as though at this point in time, our government has come so far from its roots, like where like it was here for the people, not the people were here for the government. And I think it's a, like I said, like it's a good idea to try to tax the rich and help out the poor, but I feel as though we're not going to see anything from it.
See, that's just an example of how people are feeling these days. People just feel like they're giving
cynical.
Up.
Yeah, cynical. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you,
right.
Kurt.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Let's see how other people feel. And I don't know. It was the government was originally set up. You know, I'm not even sure I agree with that. I mean, the establishment of the American government as when it separated from England back in 1776 or whenever, you know, the Revolutionary War ended. I guess that's when it was really official and set up and the Constitution established and all that. The founding fathers, most of them, weren't too red hot on the average person. I mean, they distrusted the masses. Alexander Hamilton, what's he on? $50 bill? $20 bill? Isn't that weird? Let me see. You know, actually, I hope nothing happens. I don't have a penny with me. I'm going home, riding home with you, Jillian.
Okay.
And anyway, Alexander Hamilton referred to the people as the great beast. And that's why they feared the rabble and the ruling classes of which all the founding fathers were. They were the rich merchants and the wealthy merchants of the era. And they wanted to move away from absolutism, you know, the king, the idea that kings could rule.
Right.
I think we were talking about that. That people were no longer under the new government, which is an incredible step forward in human affairs. People were no longer subjects of the government, but rather were citizens.
Right.
That had that word, inalienable rights, which means, you know, sometimes I wonder whether people even know what that means. It's like, you know, alien. You know, isn't it? But probably most
like
of you
undeniable
or that you they can't be taken away. There's no way you can alienate them. There's no way that they can be taken away. And we have these protections in writing. But you know, as long as you don't want to really say anything, you know, that you ever hear the Clash song "Know Your Rights"?
Oh, sure.
You have the first one is you have the right. Know Your Rights. All three of them. And the first one is you have the right of free speech unless you really try to say something or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's a public service announcement with guitars.
Jeez, I haven't thought about that one in a long time.
That's a good one. Anyway, there's been this enormous battle throughout American history to make the Constitution alive. That is to say that the guarantees that we have are actually allowed, so that the protest rallies aren't broken up, is that the police don't put you in jail
right.
because you have a different point of view that you can.
How about the medical marijuana thing? Like you can get your card, but then these caregivers are being shut down.
Wow! All the phones just lit up. Let's go to Zach. Zach's in Harrison Township. Hey, Zach, what's up? You want to talk about taxes?
Yes, I did.
Go ahead.
Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
Yeah, thank you.
However, I do think you're going to find my opinion a little bit different than your own.
That's
well,
okay.
We encourage that on this show. We don't want to just sit there and, you know, look in the mirror and
I do,
pat each other on the back.
I do, but go ahead. I'll sit still for a
second. Depends on how bad it is.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I'll say this. I think the bad part of a tax any increased tax, in my opinion, on anybody, and that includes the rich, it restricts the economy because it takes money out of businesses' pockets. Now, the rich make a lot of money, and granted, maybe only $450,000 that it affects, but you're talking about millions upon millions of dollars that could
right.
be circulating in the economy that's taken out.
Wait. It's the absolute opposite, though.
Yeah.
These guys are sitting on $1 trillion, and if this money, for instance, was put into the economy in the way of that President Obama has been talking about rebuilding schools, using it for other infrastructure improvements, this would hire people. I mean, the problem is that there is so much wealth that is parked and doing absolutely nothing. I mean, what is Bill Gates doing with $45 billion? It's not circulating in the economy at all.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you look at any of the statistics, most of the spending in the country come from the upper class of citizens. And a lot of those people who are also some of the mega rich are also big time investors in startup companies, which is only beneficial to Americans because that way you have more businesses in the economy that hire more people. And right now we have a problem.
But wait a minute. Why haven't they done it before? I mean, they got this big tax decrease under Bush and things went totally south. I mean, everything that you're saying has already happened and it turned out to be a disaster.
Well, I'm not so sure. I don't think that's the big contribution to why the economy crumbled in the last few years, to be honest.
Well, why do you think it did?
I think it did. Well, I think that the big starter was the fact that banks were giving out loans for people to get mortgages, and they're giving these mortgages to people who just did not have the money to pay it back. And a lot of that was, you know.
Well, it had to do with deregulation. It had to do with the allowing these banks to start doing investments and that was the Republican dream. You set the market free and then everything will happen wonderfully. And the opposite occurred.
Well, if there was a quota that was put on how many low-income households, you had to get loans from banks under Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was something that was started a long time, even before Bush became in office.
Oh, I agree. I mean, this has been
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, this has been a 30-year campaign beginning under Reagan to deregulate. Essentially, what their idea was. I mean, this is Milton Friedman, the Chicago school, is that if you have the market unfettered. That is to say that you don't have onerous taxes on the wealthy and the corporations. If you allow as much investment as possible, unrestricted, that is deregulated, that eventually everyone will do well and that all boats will rise. Well, the only boats that have risen are those of the wealthy because they took a little hit in the Bush, the first year of the Bush recession. But since then, they're back. They're doing great. And they have billions, trillions, and they're not doing a damn thing with it. And it's not because of any taxes or regulations. Are you?
Well,
give me your last word. I'll let you have the last word, but then I got to go.
Okay, just real quick. Like your previous caller said, all this money, when it gets sucked up by the government, goes into these programs that government bureaucrats think will be the most beneficial, like they did in the stimulus plans, and those turned out to be nothing. They didn't really stimulate the economy at all.
Well, you know what?
They kept it from completely falling apart.
One thing it did stop from capitalism from absolutely collapsing. And the other thing that it did, I mean, remember our auto industry seemed to do okay with that. But that's not the stimulus. That was the bailout. But the stimulus, according to people that think that stimuluses work, they think it was maybe 25% of what it should have been. In other words, it should have been
four
times bigger because the problem was of that magnitude. Okay, Zach, I lied. I had the last word. Thank you. Thank you for calling. Yeah. Let's see. Here is Robert in Ortonville. Hey, Robert. Thanks for listening way up in Ortonville.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good. What's up?
Good. I've been on the show before. I actually called during the opening weekend back in 2004, the third night, 9/11, and Michael Moore was right then, and he ended up being right in the end, didn't he?
Well, yeah. Michael Moore, the man.
Michael Moore has a new book out.
Oh, yeah. What is that? What's the new one about?
But it's a little memoir of up until he made his first movie.
Oh, really?
I can't remember the name of it.
Roger and Me?
No. This is a new book.
A new one.
A new book that's just come out. All right. Call talkyes@yahoo.com. Emailers. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just basically want to tell you guys that I did definitely support Congressman Ron Paul for president in 2012. You also won the straw poll tonight, and the media is not covering this guy. This guy is not part of the status quo, and I wanted to see what you guys felt about Congressman Ron Paul and his issues and where he stands.
Yeah, this is like the Dennis Kucinich of the Tea Party. There's so many people who love him, but he's not going to get anywhere because he's too crazy for people. He's too crazy for Republicans.
was the thing is that I think that there's Democrats and liberals and people all alike against across all party lines that want to.
Well, he's another guy that thinks there shouldn't be a minimum wage, that there shouldn't be government Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or anything like that. He's also against the Patriot Act, which is good.
That's real good. Close all the bases around the world.
Bring the military home. We could cut the military budget probably by at least half, which would be good. He wants to end both these. Well, wants to bring troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. That's good. On the other hand, what would affect? I suspect, unless you're not, if you depend at all, or plan to depend, or have any relatives that depend on federal programs like, say, Medicare or Social Security, you'd kind of be screwed under him.
See, I don't think you'd be screwed under Congressman Ron Paul. I think he's got a lot of vision and ultimate solutions. For instance, he does want to create more jobs, and I don't think big government would be a solution for more jobs and more money in pockets. In fact, there's too much regulations for small businesses in this country and businesses alike, and that's why a lot of businesses have to outsource, because there's so much government intrusion in these government.
Well, I think what we need on business is actually more regulation, and what you're talking about is turning over our health and safety to the tender mercies of these corporations that couldn't care less about the communities that they poison, because it's all a matter of money. I mean, if you got to put in pollution equipment, like the EPA was going to order all these companies to do before the Republican Obama,
yeah,
and I didn't misspeak myself, called the
clean air,
I can't even think of the name. The EPA called them off and said, don't do it. They would just be, it would be like the 19th century, you know? I mean, here, let me just sit back.
Ron Paul stuff frustrates
Robert,
me.
Just sit back 1 second. Let me just hear Public Citizen, which is Ralph Nader's old group. They talk about the record of U.S. health, safety, and environmental regulation has been strikingly successful, and Congress should reduce barriers to regulations. Reduce, because what's happening is, he says, who is this testifying? Somebody testifying here. Oh, David Arkush, Director of Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. In light of the strong record of regulatory successes in the country and the devastating consequences of poor oversight, it is surprising that U.S. health, safety, and environmental protection agencies are some of the most heavily regulated entities in the country. That is, the agencies are so regulated. The testimony outlines remarkable benefits from public safeguards, including those from agencies under fire for their purpose, their purportedly burdensome regulations. For example, now, we're not talking about 400 years ago. For example, before the Occupational Safety and Health Administration was created in 1971, an average of 14,000 workers died annually from occupational injuries. In 2009, despite a doubling of the size of the workforce, deaths on the job were reduced to 4,340, and more than 164,000 lives were saved in 2010 thanks to the Clean Air Act. Conversely, in a country that is underregulated, that's us, underregulated, the lives of workers and the public are on the line. A lack of regulation was to blame for the Wall Street crash, the BP oil spill, Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch disaster, and a number of food and product recalls. I mean, and it's on and on like that. So what we really need here is more and more regulations on these corporations. And here's the deal. Like when they said, oh, if you try to put in this Environmental Protection Agency plan that forcing them to adopt stricter standards for ground-level ozone, and they said, well, that's going to lose hundreds of thousands of jobs, and it's going to cost billions of dollars. Well, what they're saying is, we want to continue to poison the people of the United States.
Yep.
Because to do so would cost us a lot of money. Part of our profitability is based on polluting the air, and hence poisoning the citizens, creating asthma in our children, creating cancers next to their factories. And what they want, this is capitalist blackmail. What they say is, if you try to make us stop, we're going to close our plants down. Well, obviously, they're not going to close their plants down. What they would try to do, they try to shift the cost onto the ratepayers, for these energy companies.
Yeah, remember California and the power companies when they were gouging like crazy out there. That's awful.
So that, you know, that has to be stopped and would cause, you know, when they say that, they say the new rule would cost billions of dollars. Well, yeah, it would cost them billions of dollars. And what would that mean if they had to retrofit all those polluting plants all over the United States? It would mean jobs. So instead of those billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars going into the pockets of the investors in these energy corporations, it would go to hire more people and to clean the atmosphere. So I say hooray for tight regulations. Go ahead, have the last word, and then I got to take a break.
That's the thing. There's like so many types of regulations, and the thing it is, there's the government has overlooked a lot of that stuff, like, you know, like Bernie Frank and a few other Republican, politicians.
Bernie Sanders or Barney Frank? I'm not sure which one.
What? Well, okay. Thank you for your call. I sort of missed the last part of that. Huh?
Huh?
Did you?
Did I?
Missed the last part of it.
No. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But he said Bernie Frank. It's Bernie Sanders or Barney Frank. I'm not sure which one he's
saying. I see. Yeah. So I say hooray for regulations, and we need more, not less.
Well, when it's saving us, saving people from lung cancer or whatever that regulation does to help the people, come on. Why wouldn't we want that for our citizens?
Yeah, here's what the Republican Obama says. I have requested that Administrator Jackson, at the head of the EPA, I keep thinking the ERA. I'm thinking about earn run average.
Or the Equal Rights Amendment lack thereof.
There you go. Anyway, so the Republican Obama tells the Administrator Jackson to withdraw the draft Ozone National Ambient Air Quality Standards at this time. And you go, what's all that mean? It means he said companies, corporations, energy companies, you can keep poisoning people.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
It's the shirt you wear most. An essential in any professional man's wardrobe. It's the white dress shirt. And for over half a century, the Paul Frederick White 10-Point Oxford Dress Shirt has set the standard for quality, comfort, and style. It regularly starts at $40 or more. But we're so confident that it will become your favorite shirt, we're making it available at the exclusive introductory price of only $19.95. Go to 1995shirt.com and choose our classic button-down with button cuffs or our traditional straight collar with either button or French cuffs. Choose from regular, trim, and big and tall sizes with 55 combinations of collar and sleeve lengths for an exact fit. Order today, and you'll also receive free monogramming and $8.50 value. Go to 1995shirt.com right now to order your Paul Frederick White 10-Point Oxford Dress Shirt for just $19.95. Enter promo code COTTON. That's 1995shirt.com. Promo code COTTON.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
101 WRIF.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. And you're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything rocks.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change, and compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell, and now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour. Join us at that number, 313-298-WRIF. And tax the rich, regulate the corporations. We'll be a lot better off, I say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Here's some of the stuff that's going on. The Institute for Policy Studies, there are showing that profitable U.S. corporations are dodging an estimated $100 billion in taxes each year. So, I mean, that'd be some place to start. Just get every, you know, get them to pay their taxes. And last year, General Electric, Verizon, and eBay actually received tax refunds from the government and paid no taxes.
Wow.
Obviously. And so these Republicans, though, what are they doing? This is from the New York Times. In a decade of frenzied tax cutting for the rich, the Republican Party just happened to lower tax rates for the poor as well. Because, you know, everybody's taxes sunk, except when you're in my,
My and yours.
Taxes.
Sounded like a bodily process.
Decrease. Yeah, we maybe got a couple $100 a year, unlike who it was really aimed at, the ultra rich.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I often wonder. I mean, Bush was kind of a stupido, Well, the people behind him, I don't know, I mean, was it just pure, simple greed? They figured, let's get the rich more money? Or did they actually believe if you let the wealthy have more money than they already have, that they will actually create jobs? Particularly in a period where jobs are decreasing. Well, maybe they, okay, and it hasn't happened. So what are they going to do? Well, let's cut more taxes.
There are people who do believe that, and we've heard them right here on this show. Well, we have to take care of them because they give us the jobs.
Right. Now, several of the Republican Party's most prominent presidential candidates and lawmakers want to correct that oversight, the oversight being that they happen to lower tax rates for the poor as well. And they want to raise taxes on the poor and the working class while protecting the rich, of course, they say. So they're protecting, and remember, this is how we began talking about this aspect of it, was that President Obama has said he wants to have the Buffett rule, that millionaires, that 450,000 tax filers among, what was that figure, 144 million,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of this infinitesimal amount, that they would have to pay as much as you and me, percentage-wise.
Because think about it. We do. 30%, bam, gone.
Yeah. A large majority, according to the Institute for Policy Studies, this is a good folks to check out, by the way. A large majority of U.S. corporations now establish subsidiary corporations offshore for the principal purpose of tax avoidance. The two biggest recipients of taxpayer bailout funds are, by no coincidence, huge users of the offshore system. Remember, this was Bush that began these bailouts. Citigroup, I mean, this is amazing. Pardon me. Citigroup has 427 subsidiaries in tax havens, and Bank of America has 115. Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, and also a Democrat from Texas. there are a few left. They have a version they're trying to introduce called Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act. A comprehensive bill that would close down huge amounts of illicit flows and tax gimmicks. And guess what? The Republicans are against it.
Oh, no kidding.
I mean, I don't get it.
I do. They're corrupt to the core.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand corruption. I mean, I understand corruption when, for instance, an underpaid public employee figures they can get some graft or something like that. But, I mean, I understand. I don't support it.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
Graft?
Graft? Isn't
yeah.
that, is that a, like an old-fashioned word?
What's graft? You mean like steal some pens or something?
Yeah.
Graft.
Like what do I have in my hand? 101 WRIF
pens.
Yeah, right. What is this? Bigger checks for, oh yeah, of the 25 companies that paid their CEOs more than Uncle Sam. In other words, they have these, oh, this is a different one. Yeah. Of last year's 100 highest-paid U.S. corporate chief executives, 25 took home more in CEO pay, chief executive officer pay, than their company paid in 2010 federal corporate income taxes.
Oh, my gosh.
And of the 25 companies that paid their CEOs more than Uncle Sam, 20 also spent more on lobbying lawmakers than they paid in corporate taxes.
Shocker.
18 gave more to political campaigns of their favored candidates than they paid to the IRS in taxes.
Mm.
So, it's what we say. It's this enormous racket. And when I hear some of you defend this, I think, what is with you? I mean, you might say there's a self-interest. Well, I want to have a job or I want other people to have jobs. So, if we help the rich, then they'll do what's right for the economy and then I'll be helped farther down the line. Even though I may be a low peon, I still will benefit because all boats will rise, all boats will lift in a rising sea or something like that.
That saying was came up around the time of grafting.
Yes. Hey, what happened? We never found out. The Adam Sandler.
The Hanukkah song?
Yeah, the Hanukkah song. Who else was Jewish besides David Lee Roth that we didn't know about?
I could always Google it.
I mean, are we getting emails? How come nobody's emailing us?
We've gotten one email. I don't know, Peter.
Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Let us know about that. All right, where else are we? Well, let's get some of you in on this act. Yeah, 313-298-WRIF.
And we have some open lines, so feel free to give us a call.
Yeah, here's Kevin in Detroit. Kevin, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Jolene and Pete?
We're doing
hi,
good.
Hi, Kevin.
All right. Pete, I think you're giving him too much credit. You mean a weak Obama, no Republican Obama, the weak Obama.
Okay.
And Pete, would you and Jolene explain this to me about Rick Perry?
What
now, he said that the Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, and he wants to reform it. But how can you reform something that you don't believe in the first place? He said it was unconstitutional.
Well, there you go. You know what, though? I'll tell you, Kevin. I never finished my story. Is that Jolene and I, right at the beginning of the show, were saying we never watch political speeches because they're just the visuals are kind of overcome the capacity to have
right.
critical thought.
I watched 3 minutes of one of those.
I was watching one of the Republican,
yes.
the entire Republican debates.
You watch all of them? I watched 3 minutes, and I want those 3 minutes back.
Yeah, there's what, a half hour of my life.
Rick Perry, cuckoo.
But, you know, one of the things that occurred to me, Kevin, he kept calling a Social Security a Ponzi scheme. And I was thinking, I'll bet great numbers of the audience don't know what a Ponzi scheme is.
Well, there's that, too. And then, but think of how cruel that is.
She just ran right over. I thought I had just stumbled on something amazing. But go ahead.
Well, think about all of the people on Social Security, the elderly who are watching that. About, you know, it's going to give them a heart attack when people say things like that, if they know what a Ponzi scheme is.
Some of the Republicans, particularly the ones that aren't, what's your word?
Totally cuckoo.
No, the other one, cockadoodle or something.
Oh, wackadoodle.
Wackadoodle. they're saying, well, we can't get anybody elected if they are critical, even critical, yeah. let alone start cutting Social Security or Medicare. But, I'm sorry, we're cutting you off, Kevin.
No, and also Kathy Bates in Misery. I'm in Michelle Bachman. Don't you kind of remind you of her?
Of who?
Kathy Bates of Misery. Oh. Kind of all dead left field.
She is, you know what? You're right. She does have that kind of, I don't know, psychopathic killer look.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate you calling 313-298-WRIF. Well, a Ponzi scheme, for those that don't know, is that's what Bernie Madoff. Yeah, he made off with everyone's money. And what he did, he would take the money that he was getting in to invest and pay people that had already paid in. And there was no real wealth creation. So he was always trying to, there was no there other than other people's money. And, of course, he was withdrawing money so that there was always less. There was less than the total wealth because mm-hmm. it had to take out his cut. And
now he's in prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and it was named after a guy named Ponzi that back maybe in 1910s or something like that. But, proves the guy's an idiot because it's not a Ponzi scheme. It pays for itself. And, in fact, Social Security is 100% solvent for at least the next 27 years to the point where it is not in debt at all. It is a creditor of the United States government.
Yeah.
The government borrows from the Social Security Trust Fund. And if it needs more money, real easy to do. We've talked about this one a lot. Anybody got any problem with this? Right now, when you hit $103,000 of income, you stop paying into the Social Security Fund. Your payroll tax ends. And what they ought to do is take the cap off so that if you're making $27 million a year,
yes,
or $127 million a year, as some of these guys are, guess what? You would be paying taxes on that. Anybody got a problem with that? Why do middle class and particularly working class or poor people have any tender concern for the wealthy?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't get it. And what about this? Remember what I said? You take $44 billion away from Bill Gates because he's not using it. It's just sitting there. And you use it to pay down the debt. You use it to for stimulus. You use it for something that is socially worthwhile because he made it within the context. If you're just saying it's his money, I don't know. I don't even get it. I mean, what you, the listener, the money you have is your money because it's a pretty small pile and you need it in order to live. Warren Buffett, who thinks that the rich, who's rich and thinks the rich aren't getting taxed enough, he said if 99% of his money was taken away, it wouldn't affect his lifestyle in the slightest.
Yeah.
If you took away 10% of your, and that's what's happening, like with the temporary financial manager of the schools. What was it? 10% cut or 20% cut, isn't he, in teachers? I mean, that's going to really hurt people.
Yeah. I mean, these people are already stretched tight, Peter.
Yeah. And if you imagine taking 20%, well, maybe that's too extreme, take away $44 billion, but 20% of,
here you go doing math on the air again.
And I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it. But if you took 20%, if you took 20% of the wealth of the top 400 richest people in this country, their lives would not be affected one little bit, but
yeah,
would have great effect on the debt, on the capacity to initiate projects that would help our country. So what's wrong with it? What's wrong? Anybody got an idea on that? Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi, Peter and Jolene.
Hi, Fred.
Well, I got a couple of things, and one of them goes back to the debate, and I don't know if...
what are you talking about here, Fred?
Was it the bagger debate or the...
Oh, the Tea Party thing.
Yeah.
Republicans, folks, when they weren't jousting with each other, they were busy saying stupid things, like HPV vaccine, mental retardation.
Yeah, how about that one?
Yeah, they are wackadoo.
Name one case where that's happened. Michelle Bachmann is totally out of her mind.
You know, Fred, I say almost every week that kind of talk and these kind of people previously had been pushed to the margins of politics in this country. They've always been there. That whole whack job right wing has been there forever.
Well, I'm surprised that they're not being challenged on the things they're saying enough.
Oh, they are. Well, I don't know enough. I don't know what enough means, but they are.
For instance, the thing about Rick Perry is his state for all his bragging, has the most uninsured along with the most minimum wage jobs.
Okay. You're right.
Okay.
He talks about jobs.
And then Miss Michelle Bachmann, Miss Upbiter Bootstraps, who doesn't want government, or if she wants small government.
Right.
It's been said, but I haven't heard it enough, that her family's farm greatly benefited from farm subsidies.
Oh, yeah, they have. And then her husband's clinic where they try to, quote, cure gays.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that gets federal money as well. Yeah, I mean,
aren't they praying the gay away? Isn't that what?
Pray the gay away.
These people, seriously. They need their heads checked.
Something came out today. I was watching CBS Sunday Morning, and Nancy Giles, who does a rotating commentary on Sundays with Ben Stein,
yeah,
she mentioned how during the debate, there were Republicans in the audience cheering about the death penalty, about Texas death penalty.
Oh, they
and the number of people.
Oh, it was worse than that. When I forgot who it was that said to Rick Perry, they said, "You've presided over 274 executions," and then the crowd just burst into applause.
Yes, they applauded. They applauded.
This is the death party, without a doubt.
And I think there was a question whether or not a 30-year-old who becomes severely injured should get any care. And I think they cheered, somebody in the audience yelled that they shouldn't. You know,
right.
Hell no or something.
Yeah. I hate to cast this. No, I don't hate to cast. Why am I lying?
Do it.
I love to cast aspersions on these people.
We do it for a living.
I mean, this is the at best, mean-spirited people that have lost the common sense of humanity that links all of us together. At worst, they're just a pack of fascists that haven't found the avenue through which to end the type of government that we have, because these are the people that voted for Mussolini and Hitler and all the rest of them, and they would and I know that probably some people are saying, well, wait a minute, I don't know, if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it, but I think enough people could. Hey, thank you, Fred.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Fred.
Really? Usually I just hang up. I'm saying, all right. Here is Scott in Westland. Hey, Scott, you're on the air.
Oh, great. Well, I guess I'm going to try and connect two famous people, Michelle Bachmann and Dr. Oz, ironically.
Hell yeah.
If you were watching the
Apple juice.
Republican debates, there came up the issue of, childhood vaccinations causing mental retardation. This is actually an old issue. It involves a preservative called thimerosal. And actually, the flu shot that I got back in 2010, I haven't gotten my flu shot yet this year, contained this thimerosal. It is actually a mercury compound, and I still doubt the wisdom of this. But the usual apology made for thimerosal is that there's less mercury in thimerosal that you would get from your average vaccination than is in a can of tuna. But, hey, what if the kid was, eating a lot of tuna? So I'm actually a little sympathetic here. That actually you have to worry about the cumulative exposure to mercury. That even though
indeed, let me just say though that there has been a long-standing debate about the connection between some vaccinations and autism, and recently there's been a lot of studies, and the claim now is from the medical establishment, and people often say, establishment, what do you expect? But that there's no connection, although there is, I think, at least in some states, an opt-out provision that allows parents that do not want their kids vaccinated to still go to school. Because if they get polio or whatever else, smallpox, or I don't know if you can get that still. But, all the other kids are inoculated against it, I guess, right?
Well, okay, but the point I want to make is that even though there's not enough mercury in one of these vaccinations to directly cause autism, there is a connection between mercury poisoning and neurological problems.
Sure.
Okay, there's a lot of sources of mercury poisoning in a child's environment besides the vaccination itself. As I said, I still eat tuna. I guess you guys are vegetarians. You know, I make.
I'm not a vegetarian anymore.
Man, I saw her eating a pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a vegetarian anymore, but I do not eat tuna.
I do eat tuna. I eat tuna.
So there goes your argument, Scott, but go ahead.
But a lot of people, some of the people listening would think I'm brain damaged.
Well, okay, well, that's the point I want to make, is that there are other sources of mercury poisoning, mercury contamination in a child's environment besides these vaccinations, and it could be cumulative. But, okay, now on to arsenic and apples from Dr. Oz.
Oh, yeah.
No, here's a scientific fact from
apple juice.
What's this apple juice thing?
Okay, from the Tabor Medical Dictionary, there's enough arsenic in 200 to 300 apple seeds to kill you.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Okay, when you eat an apple and you don't eat the apple core, that's you being kind of smart, okay? But when they make these juices, sometimes they don't core the apples. And so that means that actually the apple seeds, which do contain a significant amount of arsenic, get into the juice. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know that, but I did know, and this was...
That kind of freaks me out.
Doctor, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Dr. Oz said on his show that, you know, there was concern about the arsenic levels in apple juice.
Yeah.
Freaking people out. Well, you know what? I used to drink a big glass of orange juice every morning.
Yeah.
Because why?
Because it's vitamin C.
I mean, so you don't even need it. I mean, what you're essentially getting, if you're drinking apple juice, any of the juices, orange juice, you're essentially getting, you know, all this fructose. It's a lot of cals, and you're not getting, you know, the vitamins you get them from anywhere else.
I am now drinking.
I mean, one thing, it kind of brings your sugar up, you know, first thing in the morning and all that.
Yeah.
But I drink about an inch of orange juice just in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought there was something, the way you were saying it was, you kept saying apple juice. I'm like, what is
that? What?
It was just the way you were saying it. I thought it was some secret thing that I didn't know about.
Oh. Hey, Scott, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to discount the parents that of autistic children who feel that that at the root of their child's condition is
vaccinations.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I think that they're not foolproof by any means.
Yeah. All right, if you'd like to join us, we'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Tim, all the way up in Grand Rapids. Hey, Tim, you're on the air.
Hey,
Tim?
I was just talking to my uncle about the money that they're sending overseas for all the jobs and the unemployment money that keeps being extended for, you know, for the people that are sitting on unemployment. And, you know, I was you know, kind of bugged about, you know, now I think the wealthy suck.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can say that on the air.
No, you just did. It's okay.
No, that one's allowed.
That one's allowed.
All right.
But wait a minute.
But, you know, the biggest thing about unemployment being extended, I mean, I understand, you know, people need money and whatnot, but, you know, if the jobs were here, you know, and the wealthy were saying, well, you know, if they're going to produce the jobs that they say they're going to, which they're not, you know, we wouldn't have to send all these money. And I forgot what the term is that they call the overseas, you know, but, you know, all these Chrysler plants and all the plants that were making American cars, you know, they're not here anymore. And so, you know, they're paying people, you know, 10 cents or 5 cents to make, you know, all these vehicles and parts overseas, you know, but there's no make any sense, you know, to do that.
Well, it doesn't make any sense to people that have thought maybe 20, 30 years ago that we were going to have a life that in part allowed almost everyone entree into the middle class, and that we would have economic security, and that jobs would have a lifetime quality to it,
and
with pensions and health care and all of that. But what I said in the last week or so, Tim, was something called the Great Settlement in the 1930s, where the wealthy decided at some point that in order to have what they called social peace, that is, in other words, that there wasn't these continuing conflicts that they had, you know, huge strike waves, general strikes in cities like Toledo, and where nobody worked, Seattle, I think somewhere else as well. Huge battles in the street, you know, the conditions of the average American person was so poor because the pay was so bad. There were no safety standards, no minimum wage. People didn't have the right to organize unions. So they said, okay, well, let's share some of the wealth. This is the wealthy talking. We'll share the wealth, and what we'll get is social peace. And to a large extent, that happened. But it happened really in great terms from about 1945 to 1979, and then the greed took over again. They want it all, and when they saw that what was really driving it, it was in good part the union movement of the 1930s and the 1940s into the 1950s that was so powerful. But the unions, of course, were based on what? On workers. And when those companies began first to go to the American South, it wasn't going to Mexico or China, that they took union shops and they started going to the American South where they could pay half or a third the wages. And then, wow, they could take them to Mexico where they could pay 10% of the wages, and then even more so. Let's go to China, and we can pay 5% of the wages. Well, that seemed like a great way to reduce costs. Well, that's when the government should have intervened and had like great exit costs. Like, in other words, if someone was going to take... I forgot the name. Was it Frigidaire or something like that? And
it was Whirlpool. Yeah.
They should have said, you're moving to Mexico, or Tijuana, I think they went to. Okay, you can do it, but that's going to cost you $375 million to leave. All right, Tim, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, Peter, I got a few emails. I'll read this one. Steve from Farmington Hills wrote in and wanted to know if you've noticed how Republicans are increasingly saying that 40% of taxpayers don't pay any federal income tax. That's their deal. He said they always bring that up when Obama talks about raising taxes on the rich. So why do they bring up this statistic, and why does it bother them?
Well, I mean, actually, that's what, this is in a lot of ways kind of complicated. Let me see if
He said Yeah. Is it that they want these people to start paying federal taxes? I thought the Republicans are the anti-tax party. That's a great point,
they do.
Steve.
Great point.
They should be arguing that 70%, not 40% of Americans, shouldn't be paying federal taxes. Instead, they bring up this statistic because they want to raise taxes on the 40% of Americans that don't make it enough money to even pay federal taxes.
Yeah, I think more American people should not pay taxes, and because what we have, pardon me, is a progressive tax system. That is to say that supposedly the more wealth you make, the more taxes that you pay. In other words, is it fair? I mean, for instance, let me not pose the question. Let me read more from this New York Times piece. It's called The New Resentment of the Poor. And it's not with the Republican. The Republican leaders who think nothing of widening tax loopholes for corporations and multi-million-dollar estates are offended by the idea that people making less than $40,000 might benefit from the progressive tax code. They are infuriated by the earned income tax credit. Now, what commie put that in? It was Ronald Reagan, which has become the biggest and most effective anti-poverty program by giving working families thousands of dollars a year in tax refunds. They scoff at continuing President Obama's payroll tax cut, which is tilted towards low and middle income workers and expires in December. So they are going to vote against that, which would mean there's going to be a tax raise. So am I reading this right? Yeah. They are opposed to raising the taxes on the rich, but they're not opposed to raising taxes for the poor and the working class.
Right.
I mean, and there's some of you out there that are poor and working class and lower middle class, and you vote for the Republicans. Do you know these people don't have your best interests in mind?
Whatsoever. Yeah. You're not even a blip on their radar.
Yeah. Well,
and they're just hoping that you'll be their little minions and follow them, you know.
Yeah. They couldn't do it if they just had to depend on the people that benefit from their policies. In an election, they would get 450,000 votes.
Right.
That's the millionaires that would be taxed under the new Obama millionaire tax, Buffett rule, as they call it. And then there'd be like 175 million people voting against. So it would be 175 million to 450,000. So somehow they got to convince people. A lot of it is based on race. Remember, Obama lost the vote of white people. The majority of white people voted for McCain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgraceful.
It really is.
Places like Alabama, where it's, you know, the worst, was 80% of white people voted for McCain.
They didn't even, these people are so stupid.
They are. It defies the imagination.
It really does, Peter.
Yeah. I mean, and if you think, well, wait a minute, maybe they were just voting sensibly. Do you really think that...
Because that ain't sensible.
That John McCain and his vice president...
SP...
Yeah, could have fixed this. I mean, we know that that Barack Obama and the Democrats haven't been able to fix this all. I mean,
it would be way worse of a mess than it is now, Peter.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know what way worse would mean. I mean, we talk about lost decades.
It's scary, isn't it?
Like the Japanese economy that has been stalled forever. And massive unemployment and what have you. But I don't know. What if a modern economy just ground to a halt?
I know.
And everybody realized that almost all of this wealth that is in the upper classes is all just air. It's not even really there.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
So speaking of SP, Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
You know that the guy, Joe McGinnis, the author who moved in next door to their house. So she then put up, I don't know, a giant fence.
Yeah.
That book's coming out. And I don't know why, and I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I want to read it. It's called The Rogue. And there was an article, I can't remember where this is from, but he says she is a vindictive hypocrite and an utter fraud. And that's what people he interviewed in the town of Wasilla had to say about her.
And there's a Michigan connection.
What was that?
That she was, according to this book, she was banging former University of Michigan basketball star Glenn Rice.
Yeah, that's the juicy. That's the juicy she was, when she was a sports reporter, that she was getting down with him. And the
That's a positive. That's a positive.
Though. Yeah, you know.
Interracial sex.
I know.
A conservative.
Rocket, Sarah.
Yeah.
And
that's one. And then the other 9,764 negatives.
Yeah. And apparently she dabbled in blow. Did a little blow.
Yeah, well,
yeah, as you
this
said.
Is all, you know, I mean, this is all the tell-all stuff, though there's no, and Todd.
His response is a hoot and a half, isn't it?
Said he was stalking his family. Well, you know, people, when you're in the public eye like that, people want to write about you.
Here's what he says. Todd, in his response, I'd ask the fathers and husbands of America to consider our privacy when one summer day I found this guy on the deck of the rental property just 18 feet away next door to us, staring like a creep at my wife while she mowed the lawn in her shorts, unbeknownst to her that he was prying. It's like, you know what, get over it. I don't care. She is so stupid that it takes away any level of beauty that she has on the
outer. I look at her like this photo. We're looking at her. I'm thinking, God, she is good looking. And then as soon as she starts talking. According to McGinnis, the author of this new book, which is called The Rogue, where's his first name here? Glenn Rice, the former U of M player and a former NBA player, said of his encounter with Palin, in a short time we got to know a lot about one another. Mm-hmm. It was all done in a respectful way, nothing hurried. She was a gorgeous woman.
Super nice. Yeah, whatever.
I was blown away by her. Afterwards, she was a big crush that I had.
I love that he totally disclosed this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Todd say about that? He doesn't. He doesn't mention that.
The what about the conservative? There's a lot of conservative people who think that interracial relationships, still to this day, I just can't believe that they think this, and it's wrong, and it's bad, it's against human nature. Now, they're also probably the ones who like her. Can you imagine what they're thinking now?
But I know, but there's this famous video of her having with this African priest a minister, I mean a Christian, an African Christian doing an exorcism,
yes,
like
remember that?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes I think a lot of these conservatives like her, and they don't have a race problem. You know, that it's
clearly
political. Yeah. No, they see mostly the African-American population as being their enemy twofold. I mean, because Herman Cain, an African-American executive of the Godfather Pizza,
mm-hmm.
they're all about him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I have a guy that I go to school with who loves Herman Cain. He's down with the program. Loves him.
Yeah. And so that, you know, they're part of, they can be, you can be black and be part of Whitetopia. Whitetopia, you know, like Utopia, the perfect.
Only if you're lucky.
Well, no, if you're, you know, if you have, if you have their values, you can't even, you know, which are conservative values and then meet the kind of their social standards.
Right.
So, yeah. So have we ever said go? You go, girl.
You go.
Hey, there's some open lines, so grab them. We're going to take a break.
And it's our final half hour. And, Peter, I think you should tell the people when we come back what your upcoming interviews are.
I will do it.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats, whether they run or not. Donate your vehicle, and you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call 1-800-943-1356. That's 1-800-943-1356.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Yes.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. It's our final segment. I hope you'll join us. 313-298-WRIF. And, whoa, I did not update my website, but still, check it out. There is so much interesting stuff on here. And it ain't me, stuff that I've read and put on here. So, but tonight, we're going to be a couple of repeat shows because I was out of town this last week. But these, I was listening to these as I recorded them into our system. They're really good. Bill Morgan talking about the history of the Beats, you know, the Beatniks, the Beats, Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg and those people. And I'm forgetting now, one of these guys that used to do poetry with, I'm forgetting everything, never mind. It's getting late. And also, the other show is about GINK. GINK, what does it stand for? The NK is No Kids.
Okay.
But it's the GINK movement. It's like GINK.org or something. Look, can you put that up? But GINK. It is GINK.
Okay.
All right. They're both really good.
Does it describe us? Because neither of us had children.
Yeah. No, it does. In fact, I talk a little about my personal and private life.
Really?
My wife will kill me.
Whoa. That's a tease if I've ever heard one.
Yeah. But wait a minute. I did have something up here. Oh, yeah. This is sent to us. Oh, this came off of our Facebook page, by the way. And we'd like to invite you to participate in that. Lots going on there. And I want to thank you and Debbie for taking care of it. I just read it. Yeah?
Yes, you do.
Let's see. Why does it say anyone who seriously believes that churches and private charities could or would provide universal medical care to millions of uninsured Americans is an idiot? Oh yeah, this is this has to do with getting rid of Medicare and what have you. Yeah, the Republicans, some of the Republicans want, but here, let me see this. I see Ron Paul.
Now something terrible happens. All of a sudden, he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma, for example? Who pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of
him. What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs it.
Now, here's what's going on there. That's Wolf Blitzer asking Ron Paul what should happen if an uninsured 30-year-old has a serious accident. Who would pay for treatment? And essentially, Ron Paul is saying, hey, too bad.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
that's it. All right, here's then it goes on. Here.
He needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to...
Yeah! Freedom to die!
I know, these people are sick in the head.
They're going crazy.
Society should just let him die?
No.
Yeah, let him die!
Die,
everybody. Down.
Yeah, it's something.
I can't find GINK, believe it or not.
Oh, really? No GINK.org?
Something with no kids, but... Oh, GINK.org?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Would you have GINK.com?
No, I just Googled.
All right. So, that's it. I mean, there you go. That's the libertarians for you. Here's another one here. This is, same thing. I can't play. This is 9 minutes. But the Republicans and the teabaggers applaud death and execution. This is the party of death. We call it the party of...
The GOP is not pro-life. They're pro-incompetency.
This is a guy with some death mask on.
Oh, God, look at him. Is this on your website?
No, it's just...
Gink.org? No, Peter, it's not going anywhere.
Oh, well, maybe that's... All right, let's get back to our phone, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Regina in East Point. Hey, Regina, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
How are you?
We're good.
I'm not going to cry today.
Okay, good.
Okay. Okay. The EPA, I was sitting with a respected friend of mine because we are trivia buffs, you know.
Yeah.
And cool. He introduced me to this gentleman who worked for the EPA. And I asked him a question. How's it going? He goes, they have no idea what they're doing. And I go, well, I already knew that, you know, because I already told you about Lake St. Clair and all that things before.
Yeah.
And he goes, they have no idea what they're doing. And another point I wanted to make.
Well, you know what, Regina, I don't think, I mean, what happens? First off, we're talking about bureaucracies. Our life, I mean, one of the things that I'm not unsympathetic to the libertarian view is that our lives are, by its very nature, run by bureaucracies. Most of us work for large private bureaucracies. Daily life is administered through large bureaucracies. I mean, when we, when we have a fire in our house, we call this big bureaucracy, call the fire department, or we have a problem in our neighborhood, we call the police. The school systems are run by the, you know, an educational bureaucracy. And there's a lot of downsides to bureaucracies, and as much local control as possible is good. But there's certain things we don't want to give up to it. Like, for instance, standards for, like, clean air, or clean water. You want to leave those just to the, the tender mercies of the corporations. We're not going to be...
Frankly, Peter, that's another point I wanted to make.
Yeah, go ahead.
My son came home from college, and he just walked in the back room. I go, what are you doing here? And he laid on me. He's 6'2½", and he cried. Three of his fraternity brothers had cancer in Detroit in the same five-mile radius, and he couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Julian, shake me.
No crying.
Smack me.
Whack.
And it was in that same area of Detroit. All three of his fraternity brothers got cancer.
Was
it's
this
like
over by
Aaron Brockovich story, you know?
What was that? That incinerator, right, Peter?
Well, it could be. But if you do an industrial map of the United States, particularly petrochemical, and then you do a cancer map of the United States and hold them, if you do them on clear, acetate, guess what? They're identical.
Right.
So the industrial, the petrochemical industrial nuclear society that provides so much of what we enjoy, including, in many cases, good health, also has the dark side of creating a lot of the modern diseases. And the EPA, I think it's a mistake to make them into villains. I think if anything, they need to be more effective, but they're constrained by the political demands. I mean, even to the point where President Obama knuckles under to the Republicans, who say, the energy companies who want to keep polluting, because to not do so would cost them billions of dollars. To which I say, good. They ought to make a law that says, hey, you got to put in all this pollution equipment, which would create thousands and thousands of jobs, and you cannot pass the cost on to the ratepayer. I mean, that just doesn't work. Your profitability for the last 10 years, 50 years, maybe even 100 years, has in part been based on giving people cancer and asthma. So you got to pay back, MF.
That's right. Damn it.
Regina, thank you very much.
Regina.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
You did pretty well in not crying. Now, Peter, we got an email, and I love these guys. I dare you to address this on the air. I'm addressing it on the air because I'm not really understanding it. You tell me what you think here. You just said there was an abundance of racism because 80% of whites voted for Obama. Because we didn't say that. We said 80% of whites voted for McCain.
I hope I did. Sometimes I misspeak myself.
No, you said McCain. I remember it.
Okay.
Yet you failed to have the nuts to mention that 95% of blacks voted for him. How is it racism one way and not the other? This is so stupid.
Well, I think, I think there's a difference here. You want me to?
Yes, I do, because I want you to point this out.
It is in the interest of, one of the things I'm wary about is making any big case for the Democratic Party.
Right.
And certainly, given the history of people of African descent in Babylon, as they used to call it here in the United States, having, began their, they're the only the only people that didn't willingly emigrate here. They, you know, they were brought here as slaves. They were They were considered chattel slaves by the Constitution, by Supreme Court decisions. Finally, when they were freed, segregation was instituted, and it was approved by the Supreme Court up till 1954. So I think it's pretty difficult for anyone to imagine. It is for me, and I think I'm a lot more sympathetic than probably this writer here.
Yes.
That what that would mean to one's self-image, what that would mean to to the one's sense of what is their history, and the discrimination that continues, the disparities in wealth and access to health care. And so there was pride. I mean, there is nothing to be.
I mean, there'd never been a black president ever before. Can we please, dude? This is a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, that was, and the fact that I said that the majority of white people voted for McCain, the fact that there was probably 45-46% of white people that didn't let race be an element in how they voted, but they knew that that to vote for John McCain and Sarah Palin on one hand would have been a referendum on the Bush administration to say, yes, we liked your lying wars. We like the crimes that you've committed economically and politically. So that was really important, and I think it was important to say we can be colorblind. And I think that 45%, most, by the way, the majority of white people that voted for McCain were, guess what, of which sex?
Female.
Women, yeah, absolutely. So, is there are there drawbacks to race loyalty? Yeah, I mean there's drawbacks to having race be an element, period, and it's even worse to vote white, because, for instance, let me give you this idea: you go Google Black Caucus agenda. Like that. And look through it. The African American, I think they still call it the Black Caucus. The Black Caucus.
CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus.
Yeah, the Congressional Black Caucus. Blot out that it black, where it says. Because once it gets beyond its title, it is simply a progressive program that is involved in fairness and tolerance and trying to correct what's going on in this society. I mean, it'd be very nice if we just left all the concepts of race behind. But, I mean, I guess we're not at that point. And as long as white people are voting race, I guess it's still going to continue. So I think that there's a fundamental difference. Also, for these people that voted white, they voted against their own interests.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there is not, when you get down to what the real interests are, there's not black and white interests. I mean, because when you have programs that, that often the Congressional Black Caucus says will benefit their constituencies that are black, it'll also benefit the constituencies regardless of color, which are programs that benefit middle class and working class and poor people. So
then he went on to
let me just insult us, which is always endearing. We can get that. But as Jaleen and I always say, we in the interest of humanity.
Oh, yeah. We resigned from the white race many, many years ago. Absolutely. And I mean, this guy is so negative. I feel sorry for you. I really do. But will you bring this up on the air? Ha! No way. So, ha! Way. And that's all I have to say about that. And your insults are ridiculous.
Well, here is... pardon me.
Did you mean dink, not gink?
No,
dual
not
income?
Dink. No, that dual income, no, dink. No,
okay,
this is gink.
So that was from Steve. So, Steve, no. But we're going to find out because the interview will air at what, 1:30, Peter?
No, 1 o'clock.
At 1 o'clock,
okay. 10 minutes, yeah. Speaking of Ron Paul, here's Ron Paul Rick from East Point. Ron, go ahead, Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Rick.
It's Peter and Jaleen. How are
you? That's right, that's right. Hey, Pete, you know, you played that Ron Paul clip, but the way it was edited, you know, Blitzer asked Ron Paul if he thought that guy that didn't have any insurance should be just left to die. And Ron Paul did answer no. You didn't play that part. But he also said that all that money that we use for war and empire and crony capitalism and everything else goes along with it. If we didn't do that, we could use that money here, you know, for the poor, for the needy here. It wouldn't be so much as a burden as it is. We can't afford both.
You'd have to send me that. Rick, you'd have to send me that. When he starts talking about that, if we didn't spend all that money on the military, that is socialism, my friend.
But it's American socialism. You know, we shouldn't be, you know.
It's American socialism, so it's sort of like a national socialism, right?
Well, it'd be better than war. it would be better that we take care of the poor here than killing people, you know, all over the world.
Well, we know we agree on that. What do you think about my idea of having Ron Paul as president and the Democratic Congress 2/3?
Even if Ron Paul, all the stuff he wants to do, it's not going to happen.
No, I know.
He can't just wave a wand. So, I mean, that would be okay. He's not going to get the Republicans are going to pass his bills,
Democrats probably won't either. You know what, though? It's time for people to intervene in history. And I'll probably, on Tuesday in November 2012, my wife will say, "Do you vote?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I better go do that before I go play handball, because I do on Tuesday night." But hopefully my political activity will be ongoing, and this will be just a defensive move to keep Mitt Romney or Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann or Herman Cain out of there. And so I'm not going to start putting all of my eggs in one electoral basket. I mean, what happens? You can see. You go back to the 1960s, and you have some guy that voted for segregation all of his life in the Senate, Lyndon Johnson, suddenly saying on national television, "We shall overcome."
Mm.
And he didn't do that because, he had been converted to the civil rights movement. He did it because the country was moving in that direction. The people were moving in that direction. That's what we got to do. More on how to move in that direction on my website, Peter Werby. Hey, Rick, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
So you know where you're talking about the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song? Dr. Spock was Jewish.
I thought he was from some other planet.
Well,
not Dr. Spock.
Leonard Nimoy.
Mr. Spock.
I don't know. I don't watch that
Dr. Spock was a pediatrician.
Goldie Hawn.
Really? Okay.
Half Jewish.
Really?
Yeah. And in the song, it also says, O.J. Simpson explicitly stated as not a Jew.
Well, with that, friends, we're going to leave you. But yeah. More to come.
Absolutely. Next week and podcast tomorrow by noon.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Athena. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
For doing all this.
So much.
And yeah. Join our Facebook group. Lots going on there. Just you can go to my website, Peter Werby, werbe.com. Lots of good links there as well. You can go over to this nice little photograph of me and Jolene.
Yes.
And
I think I'm going to make our profile picture, though, the one of you and Martha Reeves.
Yeah, that's there,
one.
Too. Yeah.
Boy, she looks good.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
She does.
She does.
Except for that big fur thing.
That big fur
wearing.
Coat. That's what I was thinking. But I actually, when did I have? Oh, I have that photo of you and me in my camera, and I showed it to somebody where I was on vacation.
Yeah.
And they looked at you, and they said, "Boy, she's beautiful."
Oh, stop
they
it.
Did.
No, really, don't stop it. No, I mean, stop it.
All right, next week, friends, but stay tuned for the interviews, and we'll find out what ginks are.
Yes.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized License Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears. There are many debt relief plans and scams out there. So if you find yourself with $10,000 or more in credit card debt, get the facts about legitimate debt relief solutions available to you. Call American Credit Card Solutions for a free informational kit that will tell you about your options in simple, easy-to-understand language. The kit is free, the shipping is free, and the consultation is free. Call now, 800-541-5656. There's no hard sell and no pressure. The free informational kit can be mailed to you today, so you can examine all the debt relief options available, with no one pressuring you to make a quick decision. Call 800-541-5656. This is a first-come, first-serve offer, and kits are limited. So call right now for your free debt relief informational kit. Not available in all states. Call 800-541-5656. That's 800-541-5656.
Jeez, Q. It's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch. The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
No.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I don't know how many of you have listened to this broadcast over the years, and I usually don't talk too much about my personal life, but on some of the phone-in talk shows, I've let loose that my wife and I have never had children, and I don't know, about 90% okay with that. And it was a lot of factors, personal factors, that I'm not even going to get into, but we're looking at a population rise in our world. At a time when food prices are going up, when there's increasing demand on basic commodities, basic metals, basic fuels, and it ain't going to get better. And it could get not very pretty if we let this go unabated. And yet, how do we deal with population? A lot of countries don't like aging population without replacement young people. Other countries have the majority of people under 25, and that often creates political instability. So let's see if we can sort this out a little. Joining me is Linda Hymus. She's a senior editor and co-founder of GRIST.org. That's GRIST.org. It's an online environmental news organization. She writes and blogs about the green side of being child-free, as well as other environmental issues. She won a 2010 Population Institute Global Media Award for her writing on child-free living and population. And we are reaching her at her office, at the GRIST office in Seattle. Lisa Hymus, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter. Nice to be here.
And we should talk about GINK, too. GINK means Green Inclinations, No Kids.
That's right.
There used to be DINK, Double Income, No Kids, and some other stuff like that. But and you've written the GINK Manifesto, Green Inclined Inclinations, No Kids Manifesto. And the subtitle is Say It Loud, I'm Child Free and I'm Proud. Now, I'm child free. My wife and I are. But I wouldn't say we're proud. We're not proud nor ashamed. Why are you proud?
Well, I wanted to make the point that it's okay to not have kids. I think in our culture there's a lot of pressure on people to become parents. That's the expectation. It's particularly a big expectation for women. And I wanted to make the point that it's okay. It's okay to feel good about your life and your situation, whether it's that you have decided not to have kids or whether you just ended up not having them for any number of reasons. And, you know, I wanted to make the point that there are environmental benefits to that decision. The world population is going to hit 5 billion this fall. I mean, I'm sorry, 7 billion. I'm already a couple billion behind.
Right.
So it's rising fast. And, you know, for some people, the decision not to have a kid is one way to make a green difference. For other people, maybe it would be having one kid instead of two or two kids instead of three. But it's something folks might want to think about.
I am absolutely sure, Lisa Hymas, that your online environmental site, Grist, and yourself have no sympathy whatsoever with government, or do you, with government-mandated childbirth limits like they had in China.
No, we definitely don't, and I definitely don't. And I think most people, even who work in the population field, think that's absolutely the wrong way to go about it. I mean, especially right now, there are 200 million women in the world who want contraception but don't have access to it. What we need to be doing is making sure they have the tools and the supplies that they need. You don't need to twist anybody's arms. I mean, most women want to limit or control the size of their family and the spacing of their children. So our first priority just has to be making that possible for women. I had the opportunity this past year to go to Ethiopia and visit some rural villages where women had had 6, 7, 8 kids before birth control became available. They were so grateful when it finally did, but they certainly would have had fewer kids by their own choice if that had been possible for them.
Certainly contraception ought to be something available. In fact, the Obama administration at this point, as you probably know, is looking to see whether free contraception for as part of the health bill can be okay, which would give a lot more people access to contraception and reduce abortion rate that some people are concerned with. But it, very frequently, in fact, it is the poor nations that in which the women have many kids. And so it has an economic factor, not just contraception, but the old thing about it, agricultural societies, that having a lot of kids is a good thing.
Right. But even that is shifting in a lot of places. You know, right now across the whole world, more people live in cities than live in rural areas. Right. And pretty much everywhere, if you live in a city, kids aren't necessarily helping you economically. They're costing you. It costs money to send them to school and to raise them. So, again, I think this needs to be a matter of individual choice. And if you give women the tools and the power to make that choice, they'll make, you know, many of them will decide to have fewer kids.
Yeah. My guest is Linda Hymas. She is the editor of Grist.org, an online environmental news organization, and we're talking about living child-free. Now, I've interviewed in the past, and you may know of her, Kelpie Wilson, who is an environmental writer, and and she refers, I don't know if she still does, this was a few years ago, contemptuously refers to people as that have children as breeders. What's your sense towards people that are having children?
Well, I never use that word. I think that's sort of degrading and not respectful of other people's choices. I think for many people, having children is the right choice. You know, I think I want there to be more choices for people, and all I'm asking for is the choice not to have kids be as accepted and respected as the choice to have kids. And I think especially, you know, for those of us who are working toward a cleaner environment and a better world, I think, you know, we all want the same things. There's no need to divide into enemy camps of, you know, parents and non-parents. I think we all need to be supporting each other's choices.
Well, in your GINC manifesto, Green Inclination, am I saying that right? Is it Green Inclinations? Is that correct?
Yes, Green Inclinations, no kids.
No kids. In your GINC manifesto, you say, I like kids, many of them anyway. I know what you mean. But, you know, the idea of not having children seems to be more prevalent. It has this cultural and almost class base to it. Not like the majority of my friends do not have children. And we're white, middle class, progressive, left, and this seems to resonate real well there. You move outside of that circle, which has, you know, tens of millions of people in it, but here in the United States, and has a reflection, say, in Europe as well. But you move outside of that milieu, and what we're talking about, purposefully being child-free, I don't think resonates much.
Right. I mean, I think it is right now a sort of a limited trend, but I think part of that is economic. Birth control can be an economic burden on women, and you mentioned that, you know, the Obama administration will be deciding whether or not to require insurance companies to fully pay for prescription birth control as a preventive service. That would be a big benefit, and I think that would help a lot of women. I mean, even if you have insurance, co-pays on contraception can cost $10 to $50 a month. If you're scrimping and saving, that can be, you know, that can be a sizable chunk. A recent poll conducted by Planned Parenthood found that 34% of women voters have struggled with the cost of prescription birth control. So I think, you know, we as a society need to make that more affordable and available to women so that they, you know, so that everybody has the choice that I've had, that it can be available to them.
Well, you mentioned earlier about pressure on women. There's certainly pressure on families. I know both my parents and my wife's parents were disappointed that we never brought them grandchildren. One side actually said it, the other. My parents were modern enough not to, you know, whatever you decide, son, you know, it's good with us. Personally, and any anecdotal support, what about that kind of pressure on yourself or on other women that you know from parents that whose joy is immense when grandchildren appear?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, that's some of the most intense pressure that you'll get. And, you know, one of the things that I've try to advise parents to do is to not pressure their kids to have children. I mean, it needs to be a decision that everybody makes for themselves, and it's not right for everyone. As to how to counter that pressure, well, I don't know that I have any great advice. It's kind of tough.
Yeah, well, it is, and sometimes parents are just disappointed by the choices that we make, and if we have loving parents, even though they have disappointment, I suppose if they are loving parents, they maintain their love and respect for our choices.
Right. And they'll hopefully come to realize that that was just the right decision for you.
Lisa Hymas, you mentioned about traveling to Ethiopia and seeing the condition of birthing there and women having 6 and 7 children. What was the occasion of you going to Ethiopia?
Well, I've been writing about population issues recently, so an organization called Population Action International was putting together a trip of journalists to take us there, show us some of the programs that they're working on the ground. So it was very interesting to see. You know, I've read a lot about this, but to see and meet some of these women whose lives have been changed by having birth control available to them was really moving, and especially to meet the younger generation who, you know, women who are maybe around 20 or just coming into adulthood, who saw what their mothers went through and who don't want to do the same thing, and who say, you know, I want to wait until I'm 25 or 30 before I get married and have kids. I want to concentrate on my education. It was really inspiring. It can make such a difference to women.
Now, I don't know enough about this, so I have to ask questions. Now, in pre-technological peoples, the ones that lived around here in Michigan, the ones that lived around you or still live out in the Washington State area, they didn't have 6 and 7 kids. They somehow or other were able to limit their population. Any idea how that shook out?
You know, that's a really interesting question, and I have not read up on, you know, sort of older or ancient methods of contraception. There are definitely books out there. I should probably inform myself.
Well, okay.
People used to do in the olden days.
We won't concentrate on something that neither of us are aware of. I mean, there's the old abstention thing, but that's pretty tough. That's real too.
That's not always the most effective.
Yes.
Method.
Lisa Hymas is my guest. She is the editor of the online environmental magazine Grist.org, GRIST.org. You listen to the Peter Werbe Show, and there'll also be a link to Grist on my on my website as well. And we are talking about her Gink Manifesto, Green Inclinations, No Kids. And she says, child-free and proud. Why child-free and not childless? That's what, yeah, that makes you feel, that makes you sound kind of barren, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word childless makes it sound like you're lacking something, like there's something missing from your life. And so for many of us who've decided not to have kids, child-free is just a way to put that in a positive light, to say, you know, this can be a positive choice in your own life.
Yeah, you know, but on the other hand, pardon me, child-free sounds like, you know, like you're smoke-free, that you're free of something negative. And I have to tell you, when I look at modern parenthood and what it does to parents in terms of everything from their concerns and their fears to the amount of immense time, almost to demanding exclusive time from parents, that's one of the things that does not make me sorry whatsoever that I don't have children. I swear it wasn't like, I mean, now I sound like an old geezer, but I swear it wasn't like this when I was a kid. That, you know, in other words, that parenthood was a category that was so immersed with child rearing.
I do think it's gotten more intense. And, you know, part of that, I think it's there are a lot of new challenges for parents, you know, coping with cyberbullying and how do you handle cell phones with your kids and internet access and, you know, sexuality has sort of permeated even youth culture much more than it had, you know, a couple of decades ago. I think it's a tougher environment in which to raise kids these days. That said, you know, I have immense respect for parents who,
sure,
who take on the job of raising the next generation. We need good folks doing that, and you know, more power to them. I commend them.
Yeah, back in the old days, and not, you know, not so long ago, maybe when I was a kid, maybe when you were, they just let the dog out the back door or even out the front door sometimes, and you sent the kids off to school. We just had Detroit just got shut down last winter, when there was 6 inches of snow, and I remember they would just send us, all right, better start walking your mile and a half to school because there's going to be 6 inches of snow. So it does seem like an incredible challenge. And the other thing was, I think people, even though I don't know that they should have had the confidence, had a lot more confidence in the way they raise children, whereas today there are so many competing theories on how kids should be raised. Maybe no more Dr. Spock or anything. And that's not to be confused, people, with Mr. Spock, with Dr. Spock.
Right.
Or you just raise them the way your parents did. Now you're watching Oprah, and every other week she's got somebody telling you how to raise your kids.
Yeah, I do think it's become a more pressure-filled enterprise than it used to be. Yeah, and probably needlessly, you know. I mean, parents did this for generations before it became quite so much of a loaded enterprise.
Because before it was actually had a category of parenthood, but we've done it. The parenthood, teenagers, those categories never existed generations ago. My guest in the Peter Werbe Show is senior editor of Grist.org, Lisa Hymas, and we're talking about her Gink Manifesto, and that's Green Inclinations, No Kids. And I mentioned Oprah, and you point her out as a famous child-free person. Was that a choice on her part, or a lot of people just wind up that way?
Sure. It sounds like it was a choice on her part, the way she talks about it. And, you know, she said recently in an interview that she doesn't feel like she could have made the progress in her career or put as much time and effort into it if she had kids. So for her, she decided that she wanted to, you know, pursue the work that she was doing. And, you know, she a few years ago started up a school for girls in South Africa. She said, you know, I didn't have kids of my own, but these are my girls. So in a way, she found another way to give back to the next generation and to help them, but without giving birth to children of her own.
And you list a number of other people as well, that famous people. Could you list them for us?
Sure. Well, Cameron Diaz is one. She's talked about, you know, she at least so far has not had children, and she's talked about the environmental benefits of that. Vincent Kartheiser, he's an actor on the show Mad Men. He recently came out and said he's decided not to have kids for environmental reasons. And, you know, other celebs just haven't had kids. They maybe haven't explained the whole reason, but Renee Zellweger is one of those. You know, folks like men, too, like George Clooney and Bill Maher. One of my favorite ones, sort of a fictional celebrity, I guess, would be Carrie Bradshaw on Sex and the City. In the most recent movie, the most recent Sex and the City movie, she and her husband explain their decision not to have kids, and they get some weird looks from people and, you know, have to sort of explain why they've made their choice. But, you know, I think there are more and more potential role models or public figures who we can see making this decision. One of the things that I've heard since I've been writing about this is I've had a lot of people write and say, thank you so much for saying this. I felt like I was the only person. And, you know, I think it's good that word is getting out that there are other child-free people. At this point, according to the most recent numbers I've seen, almost 20% of American women won't end up having a kid for whatever reason. And that's up from about 10% in the 70s. So the numbers are definitely increasing. I just think the culture needs to do a little catch-up.
The conservative and sometimes the Catholic criticism of the women who use birth control not have children is exactly that, that the family unit has been, dispersed, eliminated, altered, certainly, in a manner that women are now acting out men's roles. Like, if this was 40 years ago, I wouldn't be speaking with you. I'd be speaking with a man, right? And that man, sure. you might bring him in coffee or something like that. So we've had this revolution of gender equality, which almost all of us think is good. Yet there is conservative criticism of it, that this equality has really altered, if you will, the natural order of things. I don't know if that is arguable against, but...
Well, I mean, I guess that's just a fundamental disagreement. I don't think the natural order is for women to need to stay home and raise children unless that's what they want to do.
That's key. I'm sorry, I don't like to interrupt guests, but that's key, if you want to. And that is, you could put in a different context, that is pro-choice. A number of choices available,
exactly,
of which people can select from. Not rigidly ordained categories, I would say.
Right, and that's exactly it. It's one more choice that we want to make available to women, yeah.
Now, and let's look at what I said in the introduction about what happens when you have an aging population, what happens in countries where you have an enormous youth population. There's fear on the parts of government that does not have replacement. I mean, if there's actually zero population growth or less, and you have an aging population of which of the elders, which you want seniors and elders, but on the other hand, if you start limiting the replacement births, I'm not sure what the consequences are.
Yeah, that is a big challenge, and it's one that we're going to have to face. Europe is already, many European countries are already ahead of us on that, and Japan, they have quite low birth rates, and you know, more and more of their populace is older. But this is, we're going to have to come up with some new ways to deal with that. That's just, you know, we're living longer lives, which is a good thing. So there are more people who are older. Women or families, couples are deciding to have fewer children. I mean, that's their right. You know, right now, if we wanted to maintain the Social Security system that we have at its, you know, the way it works now, each woman in the U.S. would have to have 3 kids. Well, most women in the U.S. don't want to have 3 kids. We can't badger people into having kids to support the system. We're going to need to come up with new ways to deal with an aging, an aging populace. One potential way is allowing more immigrants in. That's controversial. That might be something that some countries are going to have to consider.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I was thinking there all of a sudden, people are. And now, of course, when we think of immigrants, we think of immigrants from, our side of the world, which means that's a whole other issue. Maybe we won't even go there now. I don't know what choices are going to be made. But can these be made in terms of social policy? You said, and I specifically wanted to get that out of the way, that you and certainly your website does not support like government mandated limits on population. Although I don't know. I mean, could it one day come to that? I mean, that is a science fiction dystopia, but as it is now, I think we're drawing down on the planet's resources we're running on empty now. And the future does not look bright. So I don't know. I've got about 9 questions in there. If you can sort one of them out,
sure.
Please do.
I don't think we need to coerce or make restrictions on births. I think we can trust women to make the decisions that are right for themselves. I think there's a lot that we can do to improve things without coercion. I mean, like right now, the U.S. has a much higher teen birth rate than countries in Western Europe. Let's work to get that down. I think we can all agree that we'll be better off without teenagers giving birth. We need to improve sex ed. We need to, make sure that teens understand and that if needed, they have access to birth control. There are a lot of things we can do along those lines that, as well as just making birth control more available or affordable generally, that can help women who don't want to have kids not have those kids. And I think there's so much progress to be made in that arena, both in the U.S. and abroad, that we don't need to twist anybody's arm.
In terms of social policy, though, that would be the main thing, is access to cheap or free contraception.
Yes. I mean, you could also talk about right now there are tax breaks for parents. You could think about whether you would want to get rid of them. I mean, I don't think that anybody really has a kid so that they can get the tax break, so I don't know how much of a difference that would make. But, you could look at policies like that as well.
That's not going to make you very popular.
Yeah, I know, that's not. And I'm not even necessarily advocating that, though it's something that people talk about. But, again, I think the main thing is just making sure that women have access to contraception, and also just that their choices are respected, that it's more socially acceptable not to have kids if you don't want them, or just to have one kid. There is a lot of social pressure. I've heard some women say the pressure to have the second kid was even greater than the pressure to have the first, because there are a lot of stigmas. Only kids are going to be weird or socially awkward or spoiled, none of which is borne out by the research. But again, that's just a matter of changing minds and social attitudes.
Well, I have a sister, and I'm weird and socially awkward. So there you go.
There you go.
Well, I want to thank you.
Anyway.
Again, Lisa Hymas, thanks so much for joining me. Lisa
sure, thanks for having me.
Is the senior editor of grist.org, GRIST.org. And you can go to that website, find her Gink Manifesto. Gink is Green Inclinations, No Kids. I don't know whether listening to her made you mad or made you pleased with her ideas, but I'm sure it made you think, and I think that's what this broadcast is all about. Lisa Hymas, thanks so much for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlowers send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever. And the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They'd look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on. What's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit MortgageHelpNow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Homeowners, how do you find the right contractor when you want something built? How do you find the best service professional when you need something fixed? For any type of service for your home, go to the most trusted website for pre-screened home pros. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource that instantly connects you with pre-screened remodelers, maids, repairmen, and many other home contractors. If you need a plumber, electrician, painter, or any other home pro, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the smartest way to find neighbor-rated contractors in your area. Over 10 million homeowners have trusted Service Magic for their home improvement and maintenance projects. So hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Attention! Hydralyze is currently seeking participants with dark circles and puffy eyes. If you have dark circles or bags under your eyes, whether they are due to fatigue, your diet, or simply aging, you are eligible to participate in a Hydralyze trial. Hydralyze was introduced to address the visible signs of aging to the delicate skin around your eyes and has been shown to visibly erase dark circles and bags. To find out how you can try Hydralyze free for 30 days and participate in the Hydralyze trial, call 1-800-396-5826. Fragile capillaries under the eyes can leak, allowing blood to pool beneath the skin like a dark, ugly bruise. But now you can join the thousands of people who have seen these signs of under-eye aging literally fade away. Participate in this risk-free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of dark circles or bags under your eyes, you're eligible to participate today and experience results risk-free with Hydralyze. Call this number today. 1-800-396-5826. Once more, that's 1-800-396-5826.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learnt your first language, with no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills? You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free demo and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-441-5707 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone demo today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-441-5707. That's 1-800-441-5707. 1-800-441-5707.
Are you trying to lose 30 pounds or more? Well, what if I said you could lose that weight simply by taking one all-natural capsule a day? Intrigued? Then stay tuned for an important number.
If you're trying to lose over 30 pounds but don't want the counting and complication of diets, you can be among the first to try an amazing, proven breakthrough in weight loss. A once-daily capsule that can help you lose weight in days. For a 30-day risk-free trial, call 1-800-504-9756. Acai Fresh is one of the healthiest ways to lose weight because each capsule contains natural ingredients, including green tea extract. You'll boost your metabolic heart rate, allowing you to shed pounds in days with just one capsule a day. Be among the first to call for your risk-free trial. Again, if you would like to lose 30 pounds or more by taking just one all-natural capsule a day, call for the risk-free trial, 1-800-504-9756. That number again is 1-800-504-9756.
Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
In print in the New York Times, and that was John Cleland Holmes. But at that time, they were thinking it was a worn-out group of people. As time went by, the media picked up the term Beat Generation, and everyone then had their own different definition. So it gets a little dicier then, and even Kerouac redefined it several times. And at the end of his life, he was saying it meant beatific. It was a blessed generation.
Before we get to, let me interrupt you, Bill Morgan, before we get on to beatnik, which is kind of a goofy word, which I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about it. But, you know, actually the post-war era, or is this just more the historical mythology? This was the period of Pax Americana. It was American triumphalism. It was, the suburbs were burgeoning. The white collar man in the gray flannel suit predominated. And was it really beat other than these kind of isolated, what used to be called bohemians?
Right. Well, see, I think Jack was talking about his own group of friends, the people that surrounded him. It wasn't the entire generation like today we refer to a Generation X or a me generation as being millions of people. I think he was talking really about a group of 100 or 200 people.
Huh. Well, tell us about Beatnik, I would give it away if I said any more.
Right. Well, when Jack named it in the 1940s, they were all writing books, but the books hadn't been published. But as their books were published, they became famous, especially through the few court trials that tried them for censorship. They won those cases, but they became famous, and the media picked up on the Beat Generation or the Beats. And one reporter in San Francisco, Herb Cain, was sitting around, and he was thinking about, this was in 1958, and he was thinking about something witty that he could put together. And Sputnik had just been blasted off into space. And so he combined the word beat with the end of Sputnik and called them beatniks, because both of these things were really far out, man.
Remind us what Sputnik was, though.
Oh, that's for anyone my age, they certainly remember. But for younger people, that was the very first satellite that was shot into space by the Russians. And as a kid, I can remember going out into the yard to watch this thing passing overhead, a blinking light. It was just amazing that anyone could shoot anything into space.
And it's interesting. Well, that's a Russian suffix, because you hear like refuseniks. Or is that maybe that's just a made-up English word as well? But I'm not sure exactly. I probably knew at one time what Sputnik meant. But, yeah, so and the Beats, the Kerouacs and the Ginsbergs and the Ferlinghettis, they despised the term, didn't they?
Well, yeah, it was used for jokes and as a derogatory term. So they didn't like to be associated with that. And it also had more to do with the lifestyle of some of the Bohemians then, which really didn't characterize people like Jack Kerouac or William Burroughs.
Now, well, I shouldn't reintroduce you. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. Bill Morgan is my guest. The Typewriter is Holy is the name of the book. The subtitle, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. And it is published by Simon & Schuster. You can go to simonandschuster.com and look it up by title. There'll be a link on my site, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E, .com. Well, maybe we should actually even define who we're talking about here. Mostly when we think of, if people are familiar, and I think probably most of the listeners are, with the Ginsbergs and the Kerouacs and the Burroughs, we think of them in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s, and yet they began as sort of precocious teenagers, didn't they?
Right, that's true, except for Burroughs was a little older than the others, but everyone else was in their late teens or early 20s when they met. And they met around Columbia University for the most part, where they were students, became friends, and then became famous together.
Yeah, and you said that we usually talk about the Beat movement as being a literary movement or tradition, but you don't like that phrase, the Beat literary movement.
Yeah, my thesis is that they weren't so much a literary movement, and that's because none of them wrote in the same style. So when you think of something like a movement of Cubism or Dadaism, Surrealists, they are all working in the same way. In fact, I can't tell some of those Picasso paintings from Braque paintings. They look so much alike. But the Beats were a group of friends who happened to be writers. But each one of them wrote in a different way. Burroughs wrote in a completely different way than Ginsberg or Corso or Kerouac. So I don't, my idea is that it wasn't a literary movement. It was a social movement, a collection of friends who happened to be writers.
Yeah, they had an enormous impact on the generation after them, the generation of the 1960s. I don't know if is there a name for that, the rebellious generation or something like that. But I was even thinking William Burroughs had a book, The Soft Machine, and there was a rock group called The Soft Machine. But the influence that the Beats had on the next generation was incredible. Could you outline that a little?
Oh, yeah, that was it. The 50s, when they were writing, they were almost alone in what they were doing. But during the 60s, more and more young people picked up on their books. And I think especially Jack Kerouac's On the Road, they found the book, they went on the road themselves, they had adventures, they experimented with drugs and rock and roll. And those were the kind of things that helped popularize the movement. So that by the late 60s, which I think the period is just called the 60s, when you mention that, people know what you're talking about.
You're right.
Most young people in America knew about the Beats and adopted some of the things that they believed were their lifestyles.
Now, the greatest generation, they didn't appreciate either the Beats or what they spawned in the 1960s, did they?
No. I think that they wanted to come home from the war and do the settling down, do the raising the family, have a quiet life. But unfortunately, they also gave then power to the Senator McCarthy's and the people like that who weren't quite in the American vein.
Now, they actually had a range of politics. Since their lifestyle was rebellious, one thinks of them as being having politics from the left. Certainly Allen Ginsberg was involved in anti-war demonstrations and any number of free speech fights, and towards even to the end of his life was sympathetic to liberal and left causes. But did that characterize all of them?
No, not at all. And that's another reason that it's hard to talk about them as a group of anything but friends, because Jack Kerouac, maybe the most famous of the Beats, was also the most conservative. And he was a staunch Catholic who went to Mass every day. During the Vietnam War, he favored the American involvement there. You can't get any further away from Allen Ginsberg at the time than that, although they still remained close friends during that period.
Did they argue at all about that? Was this a, did they discuss it?
Yes. It was a troubling time for Allen especially, but Kerouac did argue about it, and sometimes almost violently. William Burroughs, on the other hand, wasn't interested in either side. He was removed from it. He was in Europe and North Africa, not interested in politics or spirituality, really, at all. But Jack was interested in Catholicism. Allen became interested in Buddhism and Eastern spiritualism.
Sure, he'd appeared at a number of times in Ann Arbor for the Jewel Heart Center, which is located in Ann Arbor, which is a famous Buddhist center here in our area.
That's right. He went on a lot of retreats there with Gelug Rinpoche as the instructor there.
I remember him discussing with the center leader who you just mentioned about what was the thought one should have in their mind at the moment of death. I thought, wow. I mean, this is in front of an audience of about 5,000, you know.
Yes, I think Allen spent his entire life preparing for the moment of his death. As odd as it sounds, I think that was the underlying reason for all of his studying, even all of his drug taking.
Did he go quietly into that dark night?
He did, and he did have a Buddhist death. He was surrounded. Gelug Rinpoche, the same teacher, came to his house as he was dying, and they chanted Buddhist mantras, and he did go out as a Buddhist, but a peaceful death.
Bill Morgan, your book, The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation, published by Simon & Schuster. You knew almost every one of these guys, didn't you?
Yeah, I was lucky in that way. I came along just at the time that Neil Cassidy and Jack Kerouac passed away, so I never met them.
What year was that?
That was in 68 and 69. Kerouac passed away in 69. Yeah. And so I didn't meet them, but I did have the good fortune of meeting all the others and working with them. In fact, someone from your area, Edie Kerouac Parker, who was Jack Kerouac's first wife, I worked with her on a few projects and edited her memoirs about her life with Jack.
Did he ever live in Grosse Pointe, Michigan? I mean, that's where she was, right?
Well, you know, he got married. He was just a kid, too, and he got married, and they went to Grosse Pointe to live with her parents for about a month, and Jack just wasn't cut out for married life or living with the in-laws, and so he left after that. But he came back to visit Grosse Pointe quite a few times in his life, and I think he was very fond of the Detroit area.
We'll claim him. I said those guys, and then immediately we began talking about Edie Kerouac. It was mostly a guy scene, wasn't it?
It really was, and Edie was not an exception. They were very much a product of their times in that way. Very liberated in many ways, but I think to most of them, a woman's job was to stay at home, cook, raise the kids, and take care of the men who were out writing poetry.
Almost misogynist in some cases, hey? Would you say that's fair?
I would say it's fair in a couple of the cases, like William Burroughs.
And
that's, the thing where Lawrence Ferlinghetti, very liberated in his views towards women, but William Burroughs, just the opposite.
Well, I was thinking about more about Kerouac and his famous book, On the Road. Do you discuss it all in your book, The Typewriter is Holy, about I guess it's pretty much a mythology that he sat down and wrote On the Road, his famous On the Road novel, in just one sitting on this huge roll of rice paper and turned it in with no punctuation.
It's true and it's false. And the true part is he did sit down, and in the course of 3 weeks, he typed an enormous scroll, which was one paragraph, one sentence, no punctuation, which was on the road. Now, the true story is that he had been working on that book for years and years and years before he sat down in that burst of energy and wrote it front to back. But he did do that feat in mostly sitting in a bathroom with the typewriter on his lap.
Hmm. Now, they've recently released, over the last few years, the original edition without the paragraphs and what have you. But it didn't arrive as a novel like that. It was re-edited. Can you tell us that story and how? Let me just maybe, since I have the book, maybe I should just shape it a little more for the listening audience. Here's a book. When you open it up, there's no paragraphs, and it's this fair-sized novel about being on the road, these manic travels of these bohemian across America in the 40s and the early 50s. But somehow it wound up, when it was finally published, with paragraphs and what have you. How did Kerouac deal with all that?
Well, that's right. You can imagine Kerouac took that scroll out of the typewriter, 100 and some feet long, and put it under his arm and went to his publisher and put it on the desk. Well, the publisher didn't know what to think of it. He had never seen anything like that. I don't know that he even read it, but he gave it back to Jack and said, in this form, we can't do anything with it.
Hmm.
So Jack, with the help of an editor, broke it up into paragraphs, into what we would consider a more traditional format.
Did he resent that? Did he resent having to do that?
Yes, he did. He did it because he was just starting out and was hoping for publication. But as the years went by, he put in his contract that no punctuation at all could be changed without his approval. I'm sure he drove countless editors crazy.
Yeah, it's actually difficult to read in some ways, but you get that that manic flow, certainly. And it has this almost breath of the book On the Road has this breathless quality to it. These people always in motion, to the point where I'm at a point in my life, I felt like when I was reading it, I felt like saying, guys, take it easy. But they never took it easy, did they?
No, and that all came through this man named Neil Cassady, who he was filled with energy, and when he talked, he would talk nonstop, I think hour after hour, without even pausing for a breath. And Jack got the idea of writing the way Neil Cassady talked. No punctuation, just start the story and just go on for 100 pages. And when you get to the end, you're at the end. Put in a period.
Now, the original manuscript of On the Road also named the actual names of Jack Kerouac's friends, the Ginsbergs and the Neil Cassady and all that. But that got changed as well for fictional characters, right?
Right. Well, that was a problem with getting by the lawyers, because they felt that you couldn't write about actual people without their permission. And then there were some questions about whether he could get the permission of everyone he wrote about. So he changed the names. But nowadays, everyone knows who the characters are. There are quite a few articles that list the actual name and the pseudonym of the characters. So it's pretty well known.
Let's go back to them sort of as a group. As you said, that they weren't a homogenous group. Some of them were gay. Some of them were straight. Allen Ginsberg, probably the most famous of the gay members of that circle of friends. And this was an era. I mean, a lot of these guys were pretty macho, particularly beginning with Kerouac, but they were accepting.
That's right. Jack was very liberal in some ways, and in accepting his friends, he was tremendously liberal. And he was a star football player, a handsome athlete who could have any woman that he wanted, and had quite a few of them, I think. But it was a time when this group formed together as friends, and they didn't look at each other as, oh, he's the queer, or, oh, he's the macho football player. They saw themselves as writers and friends. But again, it was a big group of people, and they all had different personalities and different interests in that way.
Well, the Beat Generation friends go back to the 1940s, yet a number of them are still with us. Lawrence Ferlinghetti is, Gary Snyder, Michael McClure, Diane DePrima. It's They're getting up there. I know Lawrence Ferlinghetti. What is? Isn't he in his late 80s by now?
He's actually 91 now.
91 and still vibrant, still running a City Lights bookstore in San Francisco, or at least has a hand in it.
That's right. Every day he goes into the office and does his work, and then he goes to the studio and paints and exercises. He's a great role model for anyone. He's very active, and he'll live to be 150.
If someone asked me, if I was you, Bill Morgan, someone said to me, why are you so fascinated by the Beat Generation? I guess I would say because they're fascinating. That's why the lives they led. How do you feel?
Yeah, well, that is a good answer. I hadn't thought of that, but that's how I'll answer it from now on. I think because there is such a wide range of people, some of the ones that I knew I didn't really care for personally and loved their writing, and others that I liked, maybe I didn't care for their writing as much, but there's a lot to choose from.
Was it, I think, this must have been quite a few years ago, I saw Michael McClure, who was pretty young. He was hanging out with the Beats when he was in his teens, but the guys were a lot older. And he did performances, poetry performances with Ray Manzarek of The Doors.
That's right, and he still does that. Michael was one of the closest friends of The Doors, and Jim Morrison was a special friend of his. Jim Morrison felt that he was a poet more than a songwriter, and he and Michael McClure hung out together. Michael McClure also was friendly with a lot of the people in the Hells Angels and that group. So that wasn't typical of the Beats. You can see that's another kind of offshoot, but still very much one of those original Beat figures.
Well, this is actually, I was just looking at the clock. We only have about 2 minutes left. I was going to bring up the famous confrontation with that the anti-war movement had, I think it was like in 1966 or something, out in the Bay Area, where with the Hells Angels, who were opposed to the anti-war movement. Allen Ginsberg cooled out the Hells Angels. Amazing man. Is there a way to rank order who is the most amazing of these figures?
Oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that. I think you have to look at them all and select the one whose writing you like the best. And then that would be the one that amazes you the most.
You know, actually, if somebody who isn't real familiar with the Beats but have heard particularly those names of Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and wanted to take your advice, Bill Morgan, about who should I start reading, well, this is a good place to start with Bill's new book, The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. Well, does that mean there's no more on the Beat Generation for Bill Morgan?
No. Later this summer, I've edited the letters of Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg back and forth. And next year, a volume of William Burroughs' letters is coming out that I've edited. So there's always more.
It's amazing how meticulous they were in keeping track of themselves with their letters and their photographs. There really is a treasure trove, isn't there?
There is. And times were different. It was before the emails, and they really were traveling around the world, and they kept their friends informed about what they were doing through their letters.
Well, it's always exciting talking to you, Bill. Bill Morgan's brand new book is called The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation, and it's published by Simon & Schuster. You can go to their website, simonandschuster.com. There'll be a link on my website, might be easier, because I'll have it directly to the book. Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Bill Morgan, as usual, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. Because you demanded it.
This is our duty as men.
101 WRIF and Budweiser present the Riff's second annual Rocktoberfest. It's happening this Saturday starting at 2 p.m. at Heritage Park in Taylor. If you love beer, food, sports, or just having a good time, this event's for you. And admission to Rocktoberfest is totally free. Wet your whistle with a large selection of craft and specialty beers, plus delicious food from German to barbecue. Live bands all day in the beer garden. Football on the big screen. days. Fun in the Rhythm and Card Village. Including the Beer Pong Tournament for a trip to Las Vegas and the Beer Pong Championship. And much more. A portion of the proceeds benefit the Penricton School for the Blind in Taylor. Details at WRIF.com. It's a perfect plan. This Saturday at Heritage Park in Taylor. Rocktoberfest. Presented by Budweiser. Good times are waiting. Grab some buds. And 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
The White Castle Crave Case. The original party in a box. 30 melt-in-your-mouth sliders in any combination you crave. Bacon cheese, jalapeno cheese, chicken, the original slider, and more. There's a slider for everyone. For a limited time only, save $5 when you order the Crave Case online at WhiteCastle.com. Enter promo code CRAVE. Pizza night and a bucket of chicken dinner? You're out of here. White Castle. Eat original.
Hey, guys, working hard over there? Want to score some easy cash?
Yeah!
Check it out. Renew Recycling is accepting all commercial and industrial scrap. Anything and everything you can get from the site does you right.
Wade.
Two separate serving locations in Redford and Wayne are ready and willing to pay you top dollar for your scrap. Get a truck and make a buck today.
So all of this laying around can be taken to...
Renew Recycling, located on Telegraph Road between Plymouth and I-96 in Redford, and Brush Road, one block south of Michigan Avenue. And Wayne.
And I can turn it into what?
I'm saying don't throw that away. Get paid today. Cha-ching, bling, big bucks fast for almost all scrap. Call today at 313-531-4009. Renew Recycling. Conserving the future by recycling the past. Now go get your cash.
Renew Recycling on Telegraph Road in Redford.
I got this, Jagaloo. 313-531-4009. That's 313-531-4009.
313-531-4009.
Hey, I told you I got this.
This is Attorney D. Todd Williams. Facing a misdemeanor, a felony, or a probation violation is stressful. Knowing how to proceed and who to trust is critically important. The process and selection of your attorney may be difficult, but hiring the right attorney can make all the difference. If you are facing a criminal matter, look us up at dtoddlaw.com. I'm an aggressive attorney who will give you straight answers, sound advice, and workable solutions to your legal challenge. From misdemeanors to serious felonies to drunk driving and drug cases, go to dtoddlaw.com. Stop checking the rearview mirror. Stop avoiding the pending criminal case or open warrant. Contact us to set up a free consultation to review your case and assess your options. You will speak directly to me, and together we will create your defense, strategy, solution, and outcomes that will allow you to get on with your life. Let the difference in your criminal matter be hiring the right attorney. Come to dtoddlaw.com. That's dtoddlaw.com. I know I can help. I'm D. Todd Williams, helping you to understand and exercise your rights.
They say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, some stuff may come home with you.
Oh, that's nasty.
But that's not what we're here to talk about. You've been hearing all of the hullabaloo about Rip's Sin City Takeover trip to Las Vegas to see the 48-hour concert.
Wait, did you say Las Vegas with the Riff?
Let me guess, you want to win a trip, don't you?
Oh man, do I ever! What do I have to do? I'll do anything!
Well, you could win a trip by being the 10th caller, or you could get your rear end into any Right Way location today and enter to win the very last trip the Riff is giving away. That's right, the good folks at Right Way have a Sin City Takeover trip they're giving away. And not just any trip, the very last one. So get into any Right Way location today.
Yep, you're approved.
Yes!
Statistically speaking, this is your best chance to win. Register in person today at any of the four area Right Way locations in Waterford on Dixie, Clinton Township on Gratiot, in Taylor on Telegraph, and the newest location on Plymouth and Livonia. Drive up, sign up, go to Vegas with the Riff. Only at Right Way.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. September 24th, Rocktoberfest returns. Sponsored by 101 WRIF and Budweiser. More details at WRIF.com.